a great show lined up for you tonight. Joss Whedon's Wonder Woman. It's gonna be a lot of fun. We made a limited edition print. We only made 50 of them. We're gonna give them out for free randomly after the show. But if you wanna make sure you get one, there's a donation jar. If you donate $10 to Equality Now, which is Joss Whedon's favorite charity, you can go ahead and take the poster down and get it signed by the cast after the show. Without further ado, I'm gonna introduce Curtis, because Curtis knows everybody here. He's an actor, he's a comedian, he's traveled around the world, he's been to Iraq, Afghanistan, the government's watching him. You do USO stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. And he organized a lot of what is about to happen tonight, so thank you, Curtis. And again, thank you guys for hanging out. Just being in the back. Have a good time.
Thanks. Scott, if you can just bring it down just a touch. Scott, the music, just bring it down just a touch.
Chris.
What was that?
Chris.
I keep calling him the wrong name. Chris. Sorry, Chris. Hey, thanks for coming. Give yourself a round of applause for showing up tonight, everybody. Thank you very much. I want to get right to this, so that's Mike. One big thank you to Mike. We're live on the internet around the world. We got somebody in the UK watching us right now. Hi to them. And gosh, that suit, Mike. They don't need the internet to see that suit in the UK. That's for sure. So, and yes, please donate. We have a fund in the back, a bowl. Throw some money in there, and it goes to Joss Whedon's favorite charity. And then Mike has another bowl in the other room for a fund. You put the money in there. He takes the fund. He uses the money to buy beer. So that's great. So. All right, without further ado, let's get to the cast. You guys want to meet the cast, yes? All right, ladies and gentlemen, on my far right, she's been on stage in New York and Florida and Los Angeles recently. She was in Rumors, the Neil Simon play last year. And and she believes erroneously that you can eat brunch any time of the day or night. I don't get it, it's brunch. Please welcome Tracy Grolet, right there. On my far left, we have a graduate of Second City in Chicago and Groundlings. He's got a graduate degree in theater from DePaul University. He hails from Connecticut, Eddie Jordan III. We're going back to my right. This artist is drawing right now probably the hottest character in comics, Deadpool. And he also draws another comic superhero team. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of him, the X-Men. He's a musician and actor. Please welcome Mr. Scott Koblish. Back to my left, hailing from Durango, Colorado. She's on Dinner Theater. She's been on The West Wing, Criminal Minds, a bunch of other crap that I wrote down here that I can't read, 6 feet under. She's been about every commercial for every product possible under the sun. And she's a huge Star Trek fan, which I love about that. Miss Kate Engren, right there. Next to Kate, this gentleman has written Amelia Cole, Never Ending, and The Bigger Bang, which I have every issue autographed by this guy in my collection. And if you go on eBay, you can get his autograph for $49.69. How about that? Please welcome DJ Kirkbride! Back to my right, this young lady has been in Conspiracy with Val Kilmer. She's been in Let It Snow with Bernadette Peters. She's been on Criminal Minds, Private Practice, Southland, Big Love, ER, and she was is the co-writer of the recently released Momentum and the weekend of January 4th, 2013. The biggest movie in the country was Texas Chainsaw 3D. She wrote that. She co-wrote it. Deborah Sullivan, right there. My left. This is his second development hell that he's doing. We read Indiana Jones last year. He's an artist on the comic books Guns Ablazing and Sonic. Whatever. What he said. Okay. And he drew today's poster. He drew that. So, yeah. Raphael Navarro, right there. Reading the stage directions tonight. Hailing also from Connecticut, a graduate of NYU. Yes. He's a writer-director. He's directed Jason Goes to Hell, Let It Snow, Conspiracy with Val Kilmer. He's also the co-writer of Momentum. And like I said, 2 years ago, Texas Chainsaw was the biggest movie in the country. And him and his wife, Deborah Sullivan, wrote it. And this guy's got a number of projects in the pipeline for this coming year. Plantation, Dread, Secret Santa. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Adam Marcus. And hailing from Tennessee, she's he's appeared in Key and Peele, True Blood, Party Down, and this is my favorite one of your credits, Jennifer, right here. Sharktopus versus Whale Wolf. How do I possibly get that on Blu-ray? That's what I want to know. Yeah. Yes. She does a lot of events for the comic book at the children's hospitals and charity events. So we're happy to have her here tonight as Wonder Woman. Please welcome to the channel. And once more, a big thank you to Mike Blum and here at the Comic Bug for putting this all together. Thanks a lot, man. But really, that suit is very loud. Okay, you guys ready? You guys ready for? You ready? Ready? Yes. Come on, let's hear it. Reverend Adam.
Wonder Woman by Joss Whedon. In the time of the ancient Greeks, the most powerful warriors on Earth were the Amazon women, proud, mighty, and cunning. They were never defeated in battle. Legend tells that Ares, the god of war, grew jealous of their power and had them imprisoned, their wrists bound in mystical chains, chains that robbed the Amazons of all their power. Shamed and imperiled, the Amazon queen Hippolyta prayed to Athena, goddess of wisdom, for deliverance from their slavery. The Amazons vanished from the earth. Exterior sky day. We see the roiling gray fury of a storm. And an old twin-engine prop plane roars into frame above us. She bucks bravely amidst the wind, rain, and crackling flashes of lightning. We can hear her practically shaking apart. Inside the plane, the noise is even worse. Boxes of cargo, most with a red cross, shake with pitch with the plane. The pilot holds the steering column as it bucks. Maybe 30, kind, determined eyes in a workman's face. Steve Trevor takes a hand off the wheel long enough to jiggle the radio toggle. He has to shout just to hear himself.
Growling, this is lame duck, come back.
His answer is static, the plane pitches.
This is lame duck, I got a force gazillion hurricane in my face. Visibility is zero and my readings are...
The dials are spinning and moving uncontrollably.
They're shot, my instrument panel's having serious emotional issues. I am lost at sea. Ben, Griffin, come back.
Lightning rides down, inches from the wing. Steve banks hard as his radio crackles, a South African accent coming through.
Lame duck, this is ground. Come in, come back.
Ben?
Steve, be advised, there may be some weather pattern heading.
What?
There may be a little weather.
Okay, I'll look out for that then.
Can barely read you. What's your bearing?
The scorching pot makes Steve throw off the headset. Communication fried. He concentrates on looking ahead. Outside the plane, lightning hits the left propeller. Inside the plane, Steve stubbornly rides the wheel as she starts tilting down, bucking sporadically. Steve's face sets as he realizes he's not going to make it. The windshield is pounded by rain. There then isn't, as the clouds whip away to reveal an island, green and lush.
Where the hell?
The grinding of his dying plane reminds Steve to stop wondering where he is. He scans the terrain for a landing spot, but this side of the island is all trees and waterfalls. He banks toward a river, the thing most resembling a landing strip. The plane dips a peak between him and then the river. It clears a mountainous peak by inches. Steve pulls up on the column with everything he's got. The plane skims treetops and clears to the riverbed. The back hits first. Then the front slams down, water geysering up in front of Steve as the plane rockets down the river, clipping the trees on the bank with its wings. The river takes a sharp turn, and then the plane heaves off to the side, taking out trees, bucking brutally. Steve's chair wrenches out of its mooring, and he tumbles back, strapped in and helpless as he bounces off the walls and huge metal boxes are tossed on top of him. The plane spins out, hitting an incline and sliding sideways downhill till it's stopped short by a couple of trees. As it settles, the camera moves above it, then past, to show the nearly endless ravine the trees kept it from pummeling into. At the bottom of the ravine, a pool of blue water fed by a waterfall on the other side. Inside the plane, the terrible wrench of the violated metal stops. Steve wriggles out of the chair, but his legs caught underneath boxes, and he's reaching for it, but he realizes he's got a broken wrist. He breathes heavily, looking around for a way out of this. The thump on the roof makes him jump. He looks up, not understanding what he's hearing. Then there is another. Something's on top of the plane. His eyes fearfully follow the sound as it moves up the plane. He looks about for something to defend himself with. Something tugs at the door. Steve watches it. With an agonized screech, it gives a bit, and a bit more. The door is pulled right off its hinges, and there stands the silhouetted girl in the archaic white shift. peering into the plane as the door continues to twirl in air behind her, finally dropping out of sight as she steps tentatively into the plane, and we hear a distant splash. Close on the girl. To say she is beautiful is almost to miss the point. She is elemental, as natural and wild as the luminous flora surrounding. Her dark hair waterfalls to her shoulders in soft arcs and curls. Her body is curvaceous but taut as a drawn bow. She wears burnished metal bracelets on both wrists, wide and intricately detailed. Her shift is of another era. We'd call it ancient Greek. She is barefoot. She looks about her with intense curiosity, her face coming out of the silhouette and into the light, even as she concludes.
It's hollow.
As she steps in a bit more, Steve gets a look at her. This is definitely not what he expected.
Hey.
She starts in his voice, instinctively moving back toward the doorway, though more is in strategy than in startlement.
Wait, no, I need help. I'm stuck here. Did you speak English?
She steps in, checks out his plight.
Hi, yeah, it's my leg, it's pinned. If you could get to a phone, get some equipment here to...
Squatting, she pulls the box off him with one hand, never even looking at it. She tosses it back onto a shelf. She stares at him intently.
You look horrible.
The leg's okay, but I think my wrist is broken.
No, your face. It's so...
She can't find the word, but her gesturing to her own chin might indicate it's the stubble that's throwing her off.
Well, I was crashing, you know. I didn't have time to gussy up.
I saw. Your glider doesn't seem to understand the air very well.
But the storm fried my engine. I didn't even think I was going to make it. Actually, I'm not entirely sure I did.
She reaches for his face, touches it. Realization breaks her face into wondrous grin.
You're a man.
Wow. No getting anything by you.
But he's as mesmerized as she, neither of them moving as her fingers sensuously trace his face after a time.
Who are you?
Diana.
Steve. Trevor, it's nice to...
The plane lurches again, breaking the spell not a little.
We gotta get out of here.
She slides her arm around him, gracefully pulling them both up and moving to the door. He looks down at the abyss.
Whoa, no, not a plan here.
She grabs his shirt front and sticks him out over the ravine.
No, wait, Jesus!
It's all right.
It's not all right.
Try to roll. Watch your arm.
Roll where?
She heaves him up and over. He lands on top of the plane, roiling and sliding till he goes off to the other side. He lands hard, takes a moment to recover, and looks up.
You feel safer now?
Steve has 15 sharp, gleaming spears in a semicircle around his head. They're held by 15 women, armored and helmeted in the Greek style, backlit enough to be dark and almost inhuman. Outside the city, they march, their feet tromping with a grim procession. They have encircled him and bound his wrists with rope. Diana walks beside him, staring at the enormous, austere Hephaestia.
Yeah, we'll go there.
Captain of the guard, who holds the other end of the rope that leads the captive Steve.
Look, I just want to use a phone. I got some important supplies on my plane. There's people waiting.
Hephaestia yanks his rope, and he goes to his knees.
Hephaestia!
She moves to help him up. He stands, continues talking.
So, did any of you guys hear about the 20th century? It just happened. It was so cool.
This is not as it should be. I'll make it right.
It is not to be spoken to.
You overstep your authority, Hephaestia.
And you have broken the first law. How do you think the queen will take that?
That's my concern.
Yes, it is. By all rights, your fate should be his.
And who will administer my fate? You?
Hephaestia backs off, turns, and begins marching again.
You should have killed it.
I will not kill a helpless human.
For the record, I'm not helpless. I'm just biding my time till I wake up.
This last trails off as they reach the top of a hill and look out at Themyscira. It's a vision of a city, nestled in the lush green hills. Greek in many aspects, it has an organic look that is particular to the Amazons, not just straight stone columns. More than 100 women are visible, walking, talking, weaving, forging. There is an arena near the bottom with women training at games and swordplay. As our gaze sweeps over the city, it lands on the top of the hill, where the Queen's Court sits. It's a wide open, majestic, but not gaudy.
Where the hell am I?
This is Themyscira. Home.
Who's home?
The Amazons.
The Amazons are a legend.
We are? Good. We should be.
Within the city, a bit later, they pass by open shops, but there is little commerce being done as every eye locks on the man being led by.
The Amazons were Greek and ancient. How can you speak my language?
All languages come from the same place.
A girlfriend of Diana's, Aethera, more student than athlete and very lovely, hurries gracefully to her side.
Diana, is that really a...
Steve, I'm a Steve.
This is unbelievable. What's to be done with her?
That's for the queen to decide.
Come with us to court.
It never occurred to me not to.
She falls into step, whispering to Diana's ear. Diana looks briefly shocked.
Well, I would have while you can.
Inside the queen's chamber, Hippolyta is every inch a queen, noble, beautiful, thoughtful. She is middle-aged, but very much in her prime. She is approached by Circe, an older woman. Circe is honest and humble, but her eyes pierce well beyond common sight.
The guard returns, my queen.
Is it what we thought?
A man.
All this time, and the gods still mock us. Alive?
Hephaestia would have killed him on the spot, but she was not the first to find him.
This news tightens the corners of Hippolyta's mouth, but she shows a lighter face as she turns.
Need I bother to ask who was?
Close on Diana, looking out with defiant reserve, widened to see the Royal Hall, afternoon. The huge space is open on all sides to the lush green and shining city around it. Pillars hold up the latticed ceiling, the middle open to the sky. Hippolyta's throne is a step from the floor, and she sits in it contemplatively. Ringed about the room are assorted Amazons, counselors, guards, and the curious throng. Steve is on his knees, head low, with Hephaestia by his side to keep him that way. A few paces behind him stands Diana, Aethera at her side.
Do you know where you are?
No, I got blown off course. I have no idea where I am, and even if I did, I'd be happy to forget.
Let him stand.
He does, and she approaches him, still staying on the landing that gives her height advantage.
If we helped you repair your glider and sent you on your way, would you never speak of this place?
Scout's honor.
She whips something at him, a glowing rope she had looped in her hand. It loops around him in an instant, binding to itself with a crack that startles everyone there. He stands, the glowing golden rope pinning his arms to his sides.
This rope was woven at Delphi by the oracles, blessed by Athena herself. Within it, there can be no lies, no prevarication. Will you speak true?
I did, except I wasn't a scout.
Were you sent here?
I was blown here by a storm nobody else could see.
Murmurs. Aethera looks at Diana, but she is fixated on the proceedings.
Where were you headed?
Ulcinja, on the border of Albania. There's a camp of refugees there. My plane, my glider, has food and medical supplies in it that they need.
And if you left, would you never speak of this place?
Never.
Not for gold, not for power?
Nope.
To save your own life?
Nope.
You have friends, family. If they were to be killed or tortured, would you betray us then?
Oh, yeah.
Much louder murmurs. Hippolyta whips the rope off him. It returns to her already coiled. She moves back to her throne, pondering, turns, and addresses the room.
No man may set foot on this island. This is our first and most sacred law. The penalty for trespass is death.
This is absurd.
Hippolyta shoots her a look that would shut anyone else up.
Laws mean very little to you, Diana.
Compared to life, less than little.
The law considers every life. Every woman on this island is under my protection. Thousands of lives to weigh against one.
Your math's a little off, Your Majesty.
Hephaestia moves threateningly toward him. A slight gesture from the queen stops her.
The refugee camp I was headed for, they've been cut off from the mainland for months by border wars. They're sick and they're starving. My people have been negotiating and scrounging and bribing to get one relief shipment in. One. You want to kill me? I can't stop you, and I don't really care. But my plane doesn't get where she's going. There'll be three dead for every life you think you're saving. What does your law say about that?
Your concern is for these refugees?
You want to rope me?
She thinks, approaches him more closely.
And if I told you you must die, but I would ensure these supplies were delivered after?
I could trust you to do it?
My word as a queen.
A moment. He stares at her.
Deal.
No!
Diana!
This man is no warrior, and Amazon kills in battle, not in bloodless negotiation.
Whether he means to be or not, this man is a threat to our existence.
This is not justice.
This is what is necessary, and it is my will.
The growing murmur stops dead. Diana and Hippolyta stare at each other, each in controlled ire. Hippolyta turns away to Circe.
Make sure he is well housed for the night. Tend his honor. Leave us all. I would have words with my daughter.
Steve looks at Diana, making the connection, just as Hephaestia ungently herds him away. The court empties quickly as Hippolyta wearily sits and Diana steps to her.
If you're going to ask me to stand by, well...
What is the first law?
No man shall set foot on this island.
What is the first law?
No man shall set foot on this island, lest the Amazon race should perish.
We came here to escape the tyranny of men.
She holds out her hand as she speaks, and Diana places hers begrudgingly in them. Hippolyta turns them, palms up, as the light glints off Diana's bracelets.
You wear the symbols of our subjugation, but you don't know what it was like. When these were bound and we were powerless, the pain, the shame, the slaughter, no Amazon will ever be bound again.
She moves by at Diana as they both look out at Angle Steve being led down the hill.
Steve Trevor may be an honest man, but he connects us with a world more brutish and mad than the one we fled. He cannot peaceably stay, and he cannot be allowed to leave. Do you not see this?
I see only murder.
Your eyes are clouded.
They are clear, Mother, maybe for the first time.
She starts to leave.
I envy the luxury of your clarity. I am queen of Themyscira. My responsibilities weigh heavily on me. It's simpler for those who never had any.
Diana throws her a frustrated look as she goes. Interior Steve's cell, night. Let's face it. It's really nice. Big, nicely furnished, a big bed, the works. Steve wanders glumly to a table covered with sumptuous fruits and baked goods. He starts at the banquet, picks up a perfect pear.
Prison food.
She steps out of the shadows behind him.
Why don't you care?
He turns, not particularly surprised to see her. She comes close as she talks. There is an attraction between them that neither of them mentions or possibly even knows about.
If you live or die, do you really not care?
Is this a rescue?
So it matters to you.
Of course it does. It's just, there's other stuff that matters more.
Tell me.
Tell you what?
About your world.
It's nice. It's round. What do you want?
I wonder if there's a reason for your coming, some sign, something for me to learn.
So, my imminent death is, wow, all about you. You know, I really should rest up, though, for this dying. I mean, why don't we do this another time?
But we may not...
I'll call you. I mean it. Let's keep in touch.
You make no sense.
I thought all languages were as one. Let's keep in touch is American. Forget the hell out of my face.
I don't like your manner.
And I don't like... And I don't feature spending my last night on Earth playing Discovery Channel for some bored debutante.
I'm just trying to understand.
Understand what?
You, your world.
You can't.
Can't?
Can't. Is that another new word for you? Means are unable to.
But you won't even try.
You and I have nothing in common.
He crosses to the banquet table.
Has there ever been a day when you didn't have everything you wanted? Have you ever been hungry? Been cold, worked 20 hours a day underground for no pay? Been spat on, stepped on, shot at? Your mom is queen of Crazy Town, but she's right to be scared. You want to stay as far away from the real world as possible. They'd eat you alive, princess.
I am an Amazon.
Yeah, yeah. Bend steel with your bare hands. In my world, you wouldn't last a day.
Then we do have something in common.
She exits. Outside Steve's cell, she strides glumly away from the room, the guards moving back in front of the doors. We see her at a distance, the camera coming around to find Hippolyta watching her, concern on her face. Inside the temple, we close on Diana as she enters, lost in unhappy thought.
At least tell me you looked at it.
Aethra wraps her arms around Diana from behind, puts her head on Diana's shoulder. Diana puts her hand over Aethra's, smiling for the first time in a while.
How did you know I'd be here?
What night are you not? Nobody knows you as I do. They think you're just restless.
They think I'm a child. Just like him.
And you are.
Aethra, I've had more
Every
than...
Every night, while they sleep, you come here to Athena's temple. What do you ask her for?
I ask what to ask. To know what I want. To be content. I am not what I should be. I can be more. I was meant to be more, and I know it. To do something worthy. I ask Athena what that is.
And you think she's answered...
Can it be a coincidence that a man should drop straight from the sky after all this time?
You really think you're the only woman on this island since that was her prayer being answered?
I know nothing. Only that now I'm as unsettled in my mind as I've always been in my heart.
Then don't be a child. Don't ask for guidance, for permission. Don't ask for anything. Tell Athena what you want. Maybe then you'll hear her reply.
Inside the temple, moments later, Diana's alone, walking to the statue of Athena. We pop back to see the temple is huge, the statue 30 feet high. Diana kneels before the statue, looking up at it. She bends her head in prayer. We hold on her in near silhouette as dissolving to morning, possibly with sped-up clouds and shadows. Shows that she has not budged an inch. Inside the temple in the morning, she is still looking down when she hears a rustle. On the floor in front of her, a falcon alights. For a moment, they stare at each other. The falcon screams. Diana's eyes narrow. Inside and outside the royal hall, everyone is gathering. Steve is led forward, wrists unbound. Hippolyta stands.
Step forward.
He does.
I'm afraid nothing has changed. The sentence stands.
Yeah, I figured. This is all the information on how to get the supplies to Sully, to Dr. Sullivan. She'll know what to do with them. There's a note there for her and the guys. It doesn't say anything about this place.
Then you are prepared for your death?
Is that a joke?
I regret this truly. It will be quick.
She nods to Hephaestia, who takes a step forward, and a screech fills the air. Everyone looking about at the same falcon wheels in from above, followed by a dozen others. Amazons look about. Duck! Not terrified, but cautious. The first falcon lands on the queen's throne, screeching at her. At the feet of the people, we see huge snakes make their way inside as well. People step aside, and the snakes and falcons effectively create a path through the crowd. The queen says nothing. She knows what's coming. Out of the glare of the sun step two sleek panthers, walking side by side up the path like bridesmaids. Steve looks back at them. The queen.
You're gonna kill me with panthers? That's not quick.
Then we see her coming. Coming from behind the cat, swathed in cloth that acts as robe and hood. Her feet are sandaled in burnished gold, closed at the toe, and reaching almost to the knee, a hint of the warrior's garb beneath the robe. The panthers part, the falcons perch.
What is this?
I invoke the right of trial.
No. No, I absolutely forbid
you. You can't. I don't love the law, Mother, but I do know it. No Amazon can be denied the right of trial.
Hippolyta looks down. Steve leans over to Aethra.
Trial by what?
Diana pulls off her robe in one swift motion.
Combat, of course.
Beneath is the outfit. The burnished eagle breastplate, the deep red of the cloth bodice, the skirt of Greeks. Leather stripes below to in the middle and cut higher at the hips. Dark blue with diamond-shaped silver inlays. The gold sandals matching the wristbands and tiara. A sword is on her hip, which she pulls, pointing at Steve with it.
This is the law. If I can defeat Themyscira's greatest warrior in single combat, judgment on this man will be mine to render. He will live, return to his world, and I will go with him.
Whoa, whoa, what?
What? What did you say?
If this world of his is truly mad, I would know why. I would know what it is we all fear so terribly. I consider it my responsibility.
Don't do this.
My terms are before the court.
A series of games would be necessary to determine.
We can waive the ritual, Cersei. Everyone knows who our greatest warrior is.
Hephaestia straightens up, satisfaction undermining her glare. She's waited a long time for this match.
Would someone please give my mother a sword?
Hippolyta pulls off her own cloak. Beneath, she too has a fighter's garb, though not as elaborate as Diana's. Cersei nods at a girl who sounds a deep bell. Everyone moves back, including Steve and the animals. Tight-lipped, Hephaestia presents her sword to Hippolyta. Steve watches as Hippolyta tests the heft of the sword, twirls it, and then turns and points it at her daughter. An ornate chain fence suddenly rises before his face, startling him. Widened to see it rise up on all sides between the two combatants and the audience, coming up out of long slits in the stone. Steve and Aethra wait close to the fence.
This must seem strange to you.
No, my mom and I did this all the time.
Diana and Hippolyta face each other, each with sword arm out to the side. They bring them in against their chests, blade down, elbow out, the Amazon salute. Then they move. No, circling, testing. They're at each other, fast as adders, snapping. Blades clanging off each other so fast, again and again. Each fighter tough and precise and relentless. In Amazon training, they don't teach retreat. Everywhere, Diana strikes, Hippolyta counters. Diana tries to control the fight through youth and relentless strength. And though she responds with no less, Hippolyta relies on experience over enthusiasm. Diana gets in close, and Hippolyta grabs her and throws her. A wrestler's throw, Diana rolling and coming back up with her mother's blade already upon her. Diana finds an opening and slices, ripping only fabric as Hippolyta leans back. They sweat, they grimace, they strain, but the fight slows down not a jot. Close on the others, Steve, Aethra, Hephaestia, the last being the only one who is enjoying any of this. Diana gets the hilt of the sword across the jaw. She uses it to spin into a decapitating swipe. That's blocked. Her sword loosens in her hand, and Hippolyta moves in, a foot planted hard on Diana's stomach, sends her to her knees. The sword knocked aside as Hippolyta raises her.
No!
And brings it down with all her might, Diana screaming in pain as the sword hits her shoulder and shatters on her skin. For a moment, only the clatter of the shards on stone. Then Diana is back up in a flash, swinging at her mother with brutal force. Hippolyta bat blocks, and Diana close.
In this world, it may not be the sword that will break. You will be weakened. Vile daughter, death is but there. Here you are safe, you are strong, you are a princess, and they will make you nothing. Now will you yield?
Diana looks at her with intensity, but no malice.
I can't.
I know.
She steps back, throws her broken sword down. The fences instantly drop, though now they make no sound. We hear nothing but what is between these two as Hippolyta grabs Diana to her and embraces her fiercely, both women exhausted and emotional. Hippolyta kisses her head, takes it in her hands, inches from her face. She whispers urgently.
Remember who you are. They will take everything from you but that.
She embraces her again. Outside the city, from above, we see the chamber. We may think it's the same scene, but Steve's plane roars into frame and heads off island, the camera following it toward the far-off clouds. Inside the plane, Steve pilots. Diana kneels in the back, facing away from him. She's in simple white tunic, which on her is anything but simple. A cloth is open to show her few belongings, the outfit, a sword, and the golden rope her mother used. She runs her hand along it. It glows, underlighting the uncertainty and regret she'll not show anyone else. Outside the coast, as the plane approaches land, Steve is working the radio, Diana standing behind, looking out. We hear Ben's South African accent coming in over the static.
Steve, where the hell have you been? We thought you were lost at sea.
Oh, I was lost, all right. Tell Griffin he better have a new engine in his kit. I had to put this thing back together with packing tape. How's my approach?
A little high, Skipper.
Gotcha. Weather looks good. Any wind I don't know about?
Skies are clear, Skipper. Hit runway early or you'll run out of room.
Roger that. Lame duck out. Damn it.
What's wrong?
He called me Skipper.
What does that mean?
Trouble.
What kind of trouble?
Outside the runway, the lame duck touches down, and as it passes, we hold on two men in the foreground, cradling automatic rifles, soldiers. As the plane comes to a stop, we also see our crew. Ben Zemain, Dr. Moira Sully Sullivan, and Griffin Thiel. Ben is dark-skinned, dignified, and dryly witted, the diplomat of the bunch. Sully is Irish, red hair and bright contrast to Diana's, brusque and efficient, but warm to the core. Griffin, the mechanic, looks like he should be on a surfboard, and probably often is. They emerge from their little tentplex, looking various shades of concerned. Major Milan Goshnak, the cause for their concern, the soldier's leader, he is every inch the petty warlord. Inside the plane, Steve finishes the approach and hops out of his seat, urging Diana away from the window.
Now look, you stay in here, no matter what. You stay hidden, got it? You're not ready to deal with these people. No offense, just stay.
He exits and watches him go through the window as Sully and Ben come to greet him. Goshnak approaches from a distance.
Ben? Sully?
Where the hell have you been?
Funny story, with a poignant moments and a twist ending. Hello, Major Goshnak.
You haven't been fair with us, Mr. Trevor.
My apologies. I had to do repairs on the plane. I barely made it.
My men have been here 2 extra days providing protection for your people. And this vessel is much bigger than you indicated. Very suspicious.
Everything's on your list, nothing more, except a few personal items, gifts to you for safe landing.
I'm sure we can work some kind of compensation for the delay as well.
You have no idea what it cost me to keep my men on the field.
We told you you didn't need to stay.
You're very naive, Doctor. Without my men to guard you, your precious refugees would have turned on you.
Your family's gone, Sam, and the Stargate.
We are grateful for everything you've done.
And what is your gratitude? a few paltry bribes.
They're not paltry. These are quality bribes.
I am at war. I am at war. I need what is on the plane.
Of course, with a percentage.
All of it. It is mine.
The group hesitates, realizing how bad this is getting.
Maybe we should back up.
Maybe. I leave you and your plane, eh?
He shouts something to his men, who come forward and then stop, guns raised. Steve and the others turn to see. Diana is in the doorway, looks around her. Steve grimaces. Sully and Ben look as curious as Goshnak.
My God, that is a quality bribe.
Angle on Diana as she lowers herself, her bare foot heading for the dirt, close on her foot as it touches the ground. The moment it does, the trees blow suddenly with whistling wind. The mountains, as the same effect ripples through the dense trees for as far as the eye can see. A sailboat on the ocean suddenly puffed of sail. A city seen from ground level as a piece of newspaper whips from the ground, arcing. A dark room where a figure, in close with his back to us, turns slightly, hearing something no one else can. The figure is hard to see, but already big and not quite human. Angle back on the airstrip. The argument continues.
Who is this? You said nothing of a girl.
Steve?
She's a friend. She's not staying here.
What are you? Who are you?
What are you doing? These people have work to do. Why are you hindering them?
Diana, this is not...
All the goods on the plane are mine.
No, they're not.
Do you dare question my authority?
Authority that cannot be questioned should look for a different name.
Goshnak. Goshnak pulls his pistol, aims it at Diana's chest. Steve tries to step between, but more soldiers cock their rifles.
All right, let's be cool.
You bring this whore to insult me?
What did you say?
Diana, shut up. Nobody's insulting you.
I should put you down like rabid dogs.
It's going to be fine.
If you want to challenge me, then be a man enough to do so.
He shoots her in the chest. She spins slightly with the force of it as everything else freezes, even Goshnak. She puts a hand to her chest, confused. Blood runs over her hand. She drops to her knees. Sully and Steve move to her, but the soldiers all cock and point.
Take the plane! Take everything, please! Just let us help her!
Diana's on her hands and knees, an unlovely gurgle in her breath. She pushes hard on the unseen wound. A few moments, and she wrenches her hand from her chest, rearing back onto her knees. In her bloody hand, she holds the bullet. She stares at it, standing shakily up. Goshnak backs off a step, freaked. She holds the bullet up to him, furious confusion in her eyes. She looks at Steve.
Are you people insane?
And down she goes, face first. Exterior Gateway City Night. The first thing we see is the tower, Spearhead Technologies, gleaming blackly in the night. The tower dwarfs everything around it, even the other massive downtown buildings, and does resemble the head of a spear. We arm down, and the city rises up before us. Gateway City is massive, great, eclectic towers sitting on sloping hills. The poorer section is not unlike a rundown version of San Francisco's Chinatown, crumbling and unsafe, but with splashes of color and bohemian charm. The camera continues down through the streets and into an empty subway station, then even further down into the tunnels under the city. It's big, dark, and decrepit. Old tracks run off into the darkness of unused tunnels. Ladders and sewer pipes run up from it. Stagnant water greens the walls. It is, in every sense, a low place. Climbing down a ladder is Jeff, an older homeless man, and a young woman, Ginny Wells, smartly but practically dressed.
People think it's just stories, that I'm trying to scare them, that I'm... It's not a working system, not viable. But Reese knows all about it. Reese has made his mark.
That's because he is, right? They said he left shelter. I saw some of his work.
He ain't here. Ain't been down here since he finished. There's none of us now. Even the rats are moving up. I guess that's what it wants.
What who wants?
You're not a reporter, are you?
Yes, I told you that. That's why you brought me here. You have something.
He leads her into the chamber, holding a hand to stop her.
Slow. You go down, it gets you.
Quizzically, she looks down to see holes in the floor, eaten away metal, rusted beams, sheets of old wood. Looking down to an even lower place, she steps carefully toward the wall Jeff stands below. Then she pops a flare and holds it up. She stares. Drop back wide to see her before a half-graffiti, half-American primitive mural, depicting a figure in armor on a horse stabbing a giant dragon. Then behind, towers crumble and burn. It's eerie and awkward, but very beautiful. A low rumbling becomes noticeable. Ginny looks up. But Jeff just shakes his head and points down. Ginny stares at the holes beneath her feet. At the rumbling grows louder. The space below grows lighter, but not from the harsh beams of a train. The light is red, flickering, and the space appears to be carved out of the earth. A moment, and it roars beneath us, visible only in flickers. Metal, yes, but with a mouthful of fire and an undulated, rippled body that shoots through the tunnel as fast as a train, screeching unlike anything.
Oh my God.
The white, deformed face with the bright red teeth and the carved metal skull cap appears right next to hers, grinning horrifically.
No, not yours.
She tries to scream, but he grabs her throat. We get a better look at Strife now. He's big, muscled, metal bands around his arms, a black cape rippling in the wind from below. Helmet, or is that his head, of burnished silver. As we see him head to toe, we see that Ginny sees just then Jeff's body, hunched over, head lying a few feet away.
I'm a reporter. People know where I am. They'll be looking for me.
Let them.
He pushes her away, and she falls into the hole, screaming as whatever passes underneath rips her, unseen, to bits. For a moment, Strife stands alone. He looks up at the mirror, ignoring the grinding and the screams. Outside tent, night. Near the runway is a cluster of tents, our base camp. Steve and Ben wait outside one tent. Griffin approaches.
Is she gonna make it?
Steve shrugs.
Sully kicked us out. A lot of blood.
Where on green earth did you find her, boss? I can't believe Goshnak. Who the hell shoots an unarmed, tasty-looking girl?
The same man who steals medicine from dying children.
The flap opens and Sully steps out. By the set of her jaw, we know she's not happy. Steve stands.
There's nothing more I can do.
What do you mean there's...
Diana strides out of the tent, passing them all without comment. Sully gestures. That's what I mean. Steve follows Diana as she heads briskly for the plane.
What are you doing?
I was unconscious. How long?
About 6 hours. You shouldn't be...
6 hours? God,
I... Hey, stop!
She does. And he looks at her shoulder. There's a small scar there. By daybreak, there won't be any.
You're healed?
Yes, after hours. It's degrading to be felled by a tiny piece of metal. I didn't know something could hurt that much.
Welcome to the world.
She starts walking again.
I have to get started.
Doing what?
The supplies. Are they still on the plane?
They took them to camp. It's in the hills, about 2 miles up. What do you think you're going to do?
Get them back.
As she almost reaches the plane, a guard steps out with his rifle pointed forward.
No one goes near them.
Without breaking stride, Diana grabs the barrel of the rifle and swings the guard behind it, keeping hold of the rifle as he goes flying 20 feet and lands with a thud. She examines the rifle as she ducks under the front of the plane, Steve still trailing.
So what, you're going to go up there and kill all those guys?
I will kill a warrior on a battlefield. Nobody who hides behind one of these is a warrior.
She tosses it aside and hops up onto the plane. Steve is following her when he sees she's disrobing in the dark with her back to us. So he hovers just outside.
Yeah, they're called soldiers, and there are about 30 of them, and they all got hundreds of little pieces of metal that hurt a lot, and grenades, and a whole combo platter of things you've never even heard of. So let's go to plan B, in which you don't get yourself and the rest of us all killed.
You won't be fighting.
That's not the point. You're gonna start in a freaking firefight. Those people are not... Diana, they shot you for talking.
She steps into the doorway as he moves back. He's at ground level looking up at her. She's in the outfit.
I have no plans to talk.
Outside hillside, the treetops pass below us as we sweep up the hill to see the camp nestled in a flat clearing. A big tent for the men. A makeshift metal shack for Goshnak. A couple of jeeps with machine gun mounts and a transport truck. Most everyone is asleep, with about 6 guys standing guard at the camp itself. In the edge of the camp, Diana peers out of the woods. The truck is nearest, right to the slope down toward the wood. Beyond is a tent. To the left is Goshnak's shack. The jeeps are not visible from here, and only 4 of the 6 guards, 3 by the truck, 1 in front of the shack. She looks around the ground, picks up 2 stones that fit nicely in her palm. She tosses one high. The 3 guards by the truck hear a rustling as the stone lands in the brush behind them. They move toward it. The guard by the shack watches them. The 2nd stone nails him in the head, and he ragdolls to the ground soundlessly. Angle on the truck as Diana leaps into the midst of the men. The truck is between us and them, but the camera inches under, watching feet going as Diana spins and kicks and one soldier hits the ground as the camera creeps under the undercarriage and another hits the truck, makes it shake inches from our head as we finally see the third come down with a boot on his throat, and the camera clears the undercarriage to look up at Diana, standing over her combatants, extremely low angle, every inch a hero. She looks over at the truck, the hill beyond, at the tent. Inside the tent, exterior hillside, a bit later, we see some 20 soldiers inside, sleeping in cots in two rows. One nearest the flap hears a noise, opens it to see the back of the truck. Nothing out of the ordinary. Angle by the cab stands Diana. She grips the back of the cab, plants her feet wide, and heaves, the truck rolling past easily past her. The soldier is thrown as chains attached from the truck to the tent go taut right between his legs, coming up and nailing him just before the tent is pulled into him. The truck rolls down the hill, picking up speed, and the entire tent is coming with it, falling in on itself, but still sliding along. Inside the tent, the men being thrown and battered, trying to get up or out, suddenly tipping on the hillside as the tent is pulled down the hill violently by the barreling truck. Diana breaks for the shack, and the jeep with the remaining two soldiers lights her up with its high beams as it roars beside her. Inside, one drives while the other scrambles back for the mounted machine gun. Diana runs at it, onto the hood, and body slams the guy back right off, instantly turning and getting her shoulder under the gun while gripping the barrel. At moment's strain, and it rips out of its moorings, and she sledgehammers it into the driver, crushing the windshield and most of the seat as he jellyfishes to the floor to avoid being crushed. The jeep rolls away as she flips off it, right in front of the shack, but facing the hill, where a few men are scrambling back up. Angle on Goshnak's gun in his hand as the shack door flies open, sighted like a first-person shooter at Diana's back, 20 feet away. The finger squeezes and everything slows down. The noise of the bullet in the chamber alone and vibrating loud. Angle on Diana also slowed down. As she hears the now indelible sound and momentary panic cross her face, she starts to turn. The gun fires, and we speed back as she completely turns with her fist up, the bullet sparking off her bracelet. We hold on her look. Slow burn anger with a sparking intensity of real fear, half hidden by the famous bracelet. A moment, Goshnak shoots again, and then she moves her arm only slightly. She walks toward him, confidence building as he repeatedly shoots, and she uses either arm, not just blocking the bullets, but whacking them away almost dismissively, finally reaching him and grabbing the gun hand, wrenching the gun to the ground as she grabs his throat.
Stop shooting me!
The gun hits the ground, and Diana brings her heel on it with enough force to break it.
This land is not safe for you. These people here are under my protection, and if you even approach them, your death will be appalling. Remember that when you awake.
She headbutts him, her tiara ringing in his forehead like a blunted bell. She drops him to the ground. She turns to look at the few stragglers coming up the hill. They have nothing but submission in their eyes. Outside the refugee camp, night. We find our group amongst the refugees. Sully is treating the sick in a half-burnt-out building. Food has been distributed, and people are sitting in little clusters eating. Diana walks among them, taking in their urgency. Angelon, an old woman, glares at Diana mistrustfully.
Who are you?
Diana isn't sure how to respond. The woman scuttles back into the shadows. Diana looks around to see. A little boy is digging food out of a can with his fingers. A middle-aged man, maybe his father, looks through some empty cans. He sees the boy and yanks the food from him, starts greedily gulping it himself.
Yeah, starvation doesn't seem to make people nicer. It's weird.
How could the gods allow this?
Your gods are dead, Diana. World hasn't been theirs for a long, long while.
She looks at him. He almost says something conciliatory, but just turns away. He walks off as Ben approaches.
Don't mind Steve. He doesn't like people very much.
He spends his life trying to help them.
Well, he's not very bright.
She smiles, falls into step with him through the camp.
Steve was Air Force, flew some combat missions, even got downed once, spent 5 days fighting his way back to the border.
A soldier? I wouldn't have guessed that.
He doesn't talk about it much, but it gave him a healthy distrust of anyone with too much power. Decided to draw up something more productive than bombs. He knew Sully from way back. He schemed this up together.
Steve and Sully are mates?
Mates?
Do they
mate, or...
Sully would never put up with him. I don't believe Steve's seeing anyone right now.
Oh, that's of no import. To me, I don't care about that.
And what do you care about? Steve told us not to ask where you come from, but may I ask where you're going? Do you have a plan?
To help.
Well, you're off to a pretty good start.
I need to know more. I need to see everything.
Then you should probably stick with us.
Where are you going?
Back home. We're finished here. Back to Gateway.
What is Gateway?
Exterior, Spearhead Day. Pushing in on the gleaming tower, the name Spearhead emblazoned just below the top, which widens and then comes to a point spear-like.
The greatest city in the world, the symbol of American ingenuity, prosperity, and cultural diversity.
Inside Callis's office, continuing, look out the window at a panorama of the city as Spearhead CEO Arabella Callis. Very blonde, very patrician, unflappable and icy smooth, as lovely as she is untouchable.
Literally, our gateway to the world.
She turns back and we see a meeting breaking up. A few executives and city councilmen, it's easy to tell the difference, packing up their briefcases.
I still believe all that.
Up here, so do I. It's down on the street where it gets a little more confusing.
Yes, well, we deal in military technology. We know a little something about the gray areas.
Polite laughter.
Spearhead's one of the city's biggest investors. We're not taking that lightly. We'll do our best to make these zoning issues work.
No one's looking for shortcuts. Let's get it right. City's not going anywhere.
Everyone but Callis exits. As soon as the doors are shut, she moves to a painting behind her big desk, puts her hand on it. It glows briefly, and a tapestry behind her desk lifts, a giant steel door sliding down behind it. Inside Spearhead War Room, continuing, a cross between a Wall Street trading bullpen and a Houston ground control. This is where Spearhead monitors the world. There are screens with maps and satellite feeds, dozens of employees with headsets tracking troop movements, high-level government communications, even weather patterns. These employees don't wear suits, they wear black. Callis strides through the room as various employees, ops, come up to her.
Talks between Kalteith and the Boonduke have broken down. We're hearing that the generals nearly drew on each other in the room.
Make sure the interpreter gets his bonus. And keep our reps on point. I don't want a bullet fire that wasn't bought from us.
He goes. A woman approaches. Callis never stops moving.
Weather patterns off the Carolina coast are getting as hairy as predicted. Force 5, and it should be pretty far inland.
The White House is tracking this, too. So run a scenario in case there's a swift and efficient government response. Just kidding. Prep our insurance teams and make sure the news
is written, it turns into a light drizzle, and the TV will make it like the last days of Pompeii.
A third puts her piece of a paper in her hands. She scans it.
What is this?
I honestly don't know. It doesn't seem possible.
Anything is possible, Danny. Get someone out there. I want eyewitnesses.
General Artukov wants to meet.
We don't need to meet. Tell him if he wants our new bombers before the Pentagon even sees them, that we get 12%.
Markups?
Of his country. I'm going to pray.
She exits into a dark room at the opposite end from where she's entered, paper still in her hand. Inside the prayer chamber, she goes down a few steps into a very different space, lit by torches with a grotesque statue of Ares, god of war, suspended from the ceiling like the whale in the Museum of Natural History. Beneath the statue is a pedestal with a bowl of fire. Callis goes to it, bowing her head and whispering reverently. As she does, Strife materializes behind her. His power of teleportation involves the stone floor sort of bulging and forming amidst crackling energy, as though he's pushing his way through the earth. Stone becomes cape, and in just a second, he is behind Callis, a great deal bigger than life.
You should be on your knees.
Your uncle is not impressed by supplication, Strife. What about the reporter?
She's dispatched.
You were discreet, I can assume.
He glares at her. She turns to face him.
It matters, Strife. The eyes of the world cannot be on Gateway. Not right now. The world is one...
One in silence, I know. There was a time when the God of War made war.
You want war. You need armies. You need an acceptable level of poverty and ignorance. Despair, rage, religious fervor, and above all, fear.
Fear.
Come on, Strife, you like fear.
Fear should be earned, not manufactured.
She heads down a hall opposite the war room. He falls into step with her as she hands him the paper she was given.
This should put a blood-curdling smile on your face. Remember that feeling you had that someone was coming?
He looks at the paper as she continues.
Albanian coast. Some woman took out an entire rebel brigade in just under 5 minutes.
She left no dead.
Zero casualties. Kind of unsportsmanlike, don't you think?
Where is she now?
You'll know when we do. We don't need any unknowns. If today's test goes well...
I will. It will. The Chimera has hungered for this a long time.
They step into the silo, a large space. We can tell by the echo in their voices, metal, roundish, but the technology has an ancient, organic edge to it. They stand on a walkway looking at something.
The Chimera's a machine. It doesn't hunger.
You profess to worship, and you deny my master's magics? Your technologies will only take you so far, Miss Callis.
The age of monsters is over.
Is it? Is it really?
As he says it, the camera pulls back to reveal the head of the Chimera. We see little more than a metal shape, the top of which resembles a cross between a lion's head and a massive rock drill. Clearly, filling the entire silo, the thing writhes and spews fire. Maintenance machines arm out from the wall or crawl over it, insect-like. We catch them just this glimpse, and then, above the city, we see Steve's plane as it flies directly overhead Spearhead Tower, heading for the airstrip outside of town. Inside the plane, Diana sits next to Steve and looks out at the enormous panorama, brow furrowed.
What do you think?
It's overwhelming.
Oh, well, it's not too late to turn back.
Pretty sure it is, Captain.
Is your tray table in the upright and locked position?
Just get us on the ground, man. We need sleep.
He slips back to the others.
You probably don't.
Sleep. I have to see the city. Just show me where we'll be staying, and I'll go from there.
I'm not sure I like you wandering. Gateway all by yourself.
I'll be fine.
No, I'm kind of afraid for the city.
Exterior of the city. Day. It's a packed street, but Diana still stands out as she enters frame. She makes her way through the downtown business throng, looking at everything and everyone intently, more sociologist than sightseer. A burly guy bumps into her and spins off like he's hit a corner of a wall. She doesn't even notice. He rubs his shoulder, glaring. Camera arms down as she approaches to show the enormity of the building above her. She looks up at them too, but not in awe. As she continues through the city, we see various POVs and tableaus. A three-story toy store with Ferris wheel inside. A homeless man pulling out food of a trash can next to kids being hustled into a chauffeured Rolls. A brightly lit facade advertising live nude girls. A barker outside beckoning as Diana passes. Someone shoves a flyer into her hand. She looks down at it and, appalled, looks around to give it back. Various outdoor food stands, Greek, Chinese, Mexican. A hooker in an outfit skimpier than Diana's, who stares at Diana asking,
"Who are you supposed to be?"
Exterior street, close on Diana, looking in wonder and a little fear. Reverse to see her in front of a storefront bank of TVs. On the TVs is a news report. Overseas war and atrocity, bigger than life. As Diana steps back in a kind of hypnotized shock, we track back to see the TV display is monstrously huge. Dozens of screens, each image the same horror, replaced suddenly by the cheery bright gloss of a commercial. Diana steps back into the street, and the guy pulling out in a convertible zigs around her, calling out,
"Watch it, you stupid bitch!"
Without looking, Diana reaches back and grabs the side of the open convertible. As she turns, she pulls it slowly back, its tires smoking as the driver tries to pull away. She holds the car in place and looks down at him.
"What did you say?"
Before he can answer, there is a cry of pain from across the street. Diana looks up at angle, the alley opposite, where a 14-year-old boy is having his arm twisted by a dealer.
"It's all I got, I swear."
You think you can hold out, get yourself some nice shoes?
"Ow, no!"
Diana lets go of the car.
"Lee."
"Thank you, ma'am."
He guns it, and she starts across to the alley. The dealer continues to shake the kid, really hurting him now.
"Oh, I didn't lift nothing."
Now you're calling
me a liar.
"You're hurting that child."
She's maybe 20 feet away, almost silhouetted by the light of the street.
Yeah, I'm gonna hurt you next. You get in my business.
Let go of him.
Or what?
She whips the lasso out and puts his cheek in a dazzling flash. He's grabbing his cheek and stumbling back as it's already coiled at her hip. She approaches, passing the fleeing kid. The dealer pulls out a gun and starts firing at her. She deflects three shots, closing the distance and kicking the gun high in the air.
Understand something.
She catches the falling gun without taking her eyes off of him.
I don't like these.
She tosses it aside, taking a step toward him, angle on his feet as they stumble back against the wall of the old building and the rat scurries across the other way.
You got no right. I'm protecting my interest.
What are you doing here?
I'm legitimate. You're aggressing me.
She whips the lasso around his neck.
What are you doing?
I'm just standing here, minding my own crack dealing. No. I sell crack. And guns. And I also run whores sometimes. That's what I mean.
There's others like you?
Are you kidding? There's hundreds. Gateway got a lot of needy people.
Who do you work for?
I pay up to Joey Gibb, but it all makes its way to Clean. It's Clean's world, and he's going to kill me when he finds out that I said that.
Who is Clean?
Angle on his feet as more rats, like dozens of rats, are scurrying up from the basement grating of the old building. Diana looks down at them as they mill about his dancing feet, squeaking up at her.
I'm afraid now.
So are they.
Inside Spearhead's war room moments later, Op 5 is watching a bank of video feeds while the war room bustles about. Callus watching over it all. Tech guy calls out.
45 seconds.
Chimera's beat the projections by more than a minute, and she's taking no internal damage. Green across the board.
We got geologists, structural engineers, all camera ready. Building not to code, seismic tremor, they're well rehearsed.
They'd better not sound it.
Hell is that?
Callus moves toward him swiftly.
What's going on?
Someone's on site.
Callus looks at a monitor that shows the lobby of the building Diana was outside. It's old and decrepit with a few tired-looking folk hanging out in the lobby and a manager behind the counter. Diana is literally shoving people out of the building.
Everybody out now!
30 seconds.
Where is Strife?
Inside the building's lobby, Diana has a few bewildered people shying out the door. She moves to the manager.
Lady, you need to calm down.
How many people are in here? We have to get them out.
Nobody's getting out of anything.
The building is coming down.
He looks at her, freaked, and she tosses him back against the wall in frustration, heads for the stairs. The room definitely groans, shuddering. The floor sags visibly as cracks run up the wall. The manager looks at Diana for a second, then smashes the fire alarm glass and pulls it, racing out of the building as the alarm blares and Diana heads up to the second floor. People are already coming out of apartments, whores, junkies, and some very poor families as Diana is moving up.
Get out! Move!
The building shakes again and moves as she moves up to the next flight, the third floor. More people moving frantically, and the people from the top floor as well. Diana grabs a man, pulling his big screen TV out his door. She tosses him into the throng, sans TV.
You have no time!
The building jolts and lurches, plaster smoking up the air. The staircase going down collapses. People scream. One woman is on the stairs, and Diana whips out the lasso, flicks it around the falling woman's wrist, and swings her to safety of the second floor. The people still on the third floor, about eight of them, look to her in terror.
Up across the roof to the next building, go!
They start up as they start to move as, unseen in front of frame, the floor balloons up like a fever blister with Strife begins to appear. They hustle up the stairs and Diana sees the staircase starting to give way as well. She jumps on the banister below, one leg out against the wall, just as the top of the staircase snaps loose and the entire thing starts to come down, with most of the people still on it. She shoots up her arms and holds it, straining to push it back. She gets it close enough so the people can start going up, and a blow to the kidney nearly topples her. She can feel the stairs and her precarious purchase against the wall starting to give. Looks around to see Strife just as he lands a second blow.
You're getting in my way.
Still, she holds the stairs. Outside on the roof, we see people racing out of the fire door and across the other building, which is connected and easily reachable. In the third floor, the last person is stumbling up the stairs as Strife whips out a sword and comes to her from behind again. The moment the stairs are clear, she crouches down and hurls them behind her, right on top of Strife. He smashes up through them just as she reaches him with a crippling punch of her own. They spar briefly, then he grabs her wrist to block a blow and stares, suddenly awed at her bracelets.
An Amazon!
The floor falls out from under them. Inside the lobby, two-story plummet lands them back in the now-tilted lobby, beams and debris falling all around them. They both roll right up facing against each other, but too much stuff is collapsing for any fighting space. Strife dives at Diana, rolling with her so that they are both wrapped in his cloak, and the bubble effect comes suddenly, moving them from collapsing lobby to snowy mountain range day. They roll out and face each other again, Diana taking in the gleaming stillness, the total contrast of the previous environs. Strife has his sword out, and the two of them move slightly, circling warriors ever.
Do you know me, Amazon?
Every girl in the tribe hears tales about Strife. His strength is legendary, and clearly more legend.
He smiles at the barb and comes in for a burst of violence, his blows parried barely by Diana. She gets in a decent hit, then they part again, circling.
A little more fire you than the others. Where did you get that?
From my mother.
Hippolyta, the Amazon's princess, after all this time. I was there when they bound bracelets and sucked out the Amazon's power. She came for it. Your mother was right to run and hide.
Well, you know all about hiding. Or is your name still feared in this new world?
That one doesn't get a smile. He comes at her hard and slices her, getting in a couple of nasty blows and tossing her back.
Stay out of my city, princess. You're well out of your depth.
Am I?
Believe me.
And she charges him with this, but he rolls her onto another teleportation jump and tosses her back in the lobby. Just as the building is about to collapse completely, the noise and dust suddenly and sudden and cacophonous.
You can't take the pressure.
He disappears. The building collapses on Diana. Inside Steve's bedroom, night. The room is tiny, dark, and quiet. Diana lies face down on the bed, naked, arm draped over the edge, a sheet loosely over her lower parts as Steve gently sponges off her wounds.
You should let me call Sully.
I'll heal.
He picks a tiny piece of concrete out of her back. It hurts, but she doesn't show him that.
Tell me about Strife.
He's well named. All of the gods' children, he is the cruelest. His uncle, his master, is Ares.
Ares? God of war, as in war?
If the gods are dead, why is Strife here?
This is great. The city's infested with ancient Greeks. This Strife probably rolled in on the same tide that brought you in. Every action has a reaction.
But why Gateway? He called it his city.
Nah, that's the old saying. You want to see the world, go to Gateway and walk 10 blocks. This really is the international hub of the country. Anybody with power has got a base here.
And you brought me straight to it.
Under protest.
Do you think it's all coincidence, truly? The signs are all around us. You don't think I'm here for a reason?
I think you're dangerous. I think you mean well, but you're looking for troubles and you're wildly adept at finding it. I think you've got delusions of grandeur and some actual grandeur, which is confusing. I don't like confusing. I hate the fact that I'm so attracted to you. Just touching you is overwhelming, and I keep hoping you'll turn around and I can see more of you naked.
He stops, even more confused than she is. His jaw sets, and he reaches down, pulls the lasso out from under his butt. She tries not to show her smile.
Can we not leave this lying around? There's a reason men don't like to talk about their feelings. Their feelings are lame.
I think they're fascinating.
Men?
People. You were right about this city. Just one day here and I've already seen everything.
Well, not everything.
Such extraordinary achievements and such idiocy. And over the same look on people's faces.
How do we look?
Lost. Like somewhere inside you all know this isn't good enough. The selfishness, the iniquity, the violence. It's beneath you. But you've been in it so long you can't remember. The whole city, Steve. No one ever looks up.
And that, let me guess, is your mission.
Our mission.
Tying the sheet around her and going to the mirror in the tiny bathroom, she washes blood off her face as they talk.
I don't remember volunteering for anything.
You of all people know this is not how things should be, and Strife is proof of that. He has a mission. Never doubt it. If I stop him...
What if you can't?
Can't.
Right, your favorite word. What if you lose?
As long as there's life in me, I don't quit.
Yeah, but I didn't say quit. I said lose. Any idiot can win. Doesn't mean jack till you've done the other thing.
Well, I can't do either till I start fighting.
This guy just pops up wherever he likes. How are you going to find him?
I'll do the one thing he can't abide. Give people something to look up to.
Montage. Angle. Three thugs in a warehouse as they all look up in anger and fear, and one is yanked up out of frame by a golden lasso. Angle. Diana kicking a thug back 10 feet into a wall. Angle. Diana clotheslines a running thug who flips onto the floor. Widen to see. Interior warehouse. Night. From above, we see a crate of guns. Diana's in the middle of four thugs, all of whom draw on her simultaneously, close on her face as she readies herself. Exterior street, day. Diana is atop the hood of a Humvee, one hand dug into the metal of the hood and the other arm outstretched. Angle, her lasso is wrapped around a traffic light pole. Widen to see she is holding it with all her might as the car screeches in a circle, despite the driver's attempt to steer. The big vehicle tilts onto two wheels before it smashes into a parked car. Diana flying off, flipping in the air and landing on her feet. Exterior, same. Diana has her rope around one of the passengers and he's talking. Ben is taking notes as Steve and Griffin marvel at the many, many packs of white powder spilling out of the Humvee's back. Close on Ben's pack. The name Clean is written at the top. Interior dark cellar, day. A group of young Asian women huddled into squalor, looking up as the roof of the cellar is torn off and sunlight streams in. Diana tosses the sheet of metal away, a rope trafficker looking glumly on. Inside Steve's workplace, day, Sully is treating some of the women as more are being ushered in. The space is an old-fashioned bullpen. Offices with no ceiling in a bigger space. The camera arms up to see big room beyond is sleeping a number of homeless people. In one office, Steve and Diana discuss their chalkboard diagram of a crime, at the top of which is, again, clean. Inside the apartment, day, a hostage taker is on the phone, yelling. Behind him are his terrified wife and children, tied and gagged. Outside the apartment, low angle on the negotiator, talking the guy down. And above him, Diana leaps from the roof opposite to the top of the building. A couple of people see, and everyone starts to crane around to look. When the hostage taker comes flying out of the fourth story window and lands heavily on the fire escape. Outside on the street, we're behind a fire truck racing to the scene. As it turns the corner, we see the scene is another collapsed building. Outside the building, firemen rush to a pile of rubble, and the rubble lifts, Diana holding up an entire ceiling as dust-covered people scramble hurriedly out to safety. Interior warehouse, and here finally is the second half of the fight, when all the guns light up and Diana turns whirling dervish, deflecting every single shot with astonishing fluidity. Within 10 seconds, she has every shooter on the floor. Inside, saying, moments later, one of the thugs tries to crawl away, and the golden rope whips around his midsection. Exterior street, dawn. Diana comes around a corner in a rundown but residential neighborhood. She looks at the sun peeking up over the roof, takes a breath. A cute little girl of 10 stands nearby at the bottom of a gnarled tree. She calls out,
"Lady, my cat is up in the tree."
Diana looks up, sees the cat on a branch, looks back at the girl with dismissive incomprehension.
Climate.
Angle on a TV with a newscaster on it. A middle-aged female with a picture of the building collapsing aftermath and words Wonder Woman over it.
Reports have come in from all over the city. Descriptions vary, but all describe her as a female, impossibly strong and scantily clad.
We are pulling back on the TV as they cut to the two-shot with the male newscaster.
So, what do you think? Publicity stunt?
Probably. Last time I checked, heroes didn't run around in bustiers.
During this, it cuts to a blurry video image of Diana at the fire, which freezes, and a spear destroys the TV image. Interior, Callis's office. Widen to see Strife holding the other end of the long spear, Callis sitting at her desk calmly, a long beat.
Sorry.
He pulls the spear out.
I understand exactly how you feel.
Then let me put this through something besides her picture.
You want to go to war with the entire Amazon nation? Well, right, of course you do. But it would seriously crimp our plans.
Does she not away?
Oh, yes, that's why I'm sending you back home. There's something there we need.
I'm to run errands now?
Oh, no. This is a dream for you. If your uncle tells you you can't kill the girl, there should only be one question in your mind. What, for an Amazon, is worse than death?
A beat. And then a close-up of Strife's appalling grin. Exterior, a club, night. The club is classic, trendy. People lined up behind a velvet rope, all trying to get the attention of the bouncer, a huge guy with a headset, a clipboard, and patience for nobody. Our gang is on the street approaching it.
Nearly
every trail I followed leads to this man Queen. This is where he's to be found.
Magic lasso confessions hold up in court?
I just know I was meant to come here.
Been reading the signs?
Just one.
The camera pans up from them to the club sign, Olympus. Steve shakes his head, defeated. Diana moves past a waiting girl who becomes indignant, putting her hand on Diana's arm.
Excuse me, who are you?
Diana looks at her for a second and the girl drops her arm. They reach the bouncer, who steps in Diana's way.
Oh, hold on.
We're going inside.
Not until I say you are, and I ain't saying it. You wait about an hour, and I might take pity, because you're fine. It's true, that's not gonna happen.
I haven't time for this. I'm Diana.
Doesn't matter who you are, I'm the bouncer, bitch. And the first rule of clubbing is you never piss off the bouncer.
Interior just inside the door, but a bit later. Diana strides into the club, brow furrowed, Steve beside.
I don't get it.
What?
He didn't bounce.
Outside Olympus, we see the bouncer unconsciously against the cracked windshield of a car. Griffin has his headset and clipboard.
Okay, guy from the burbs, desperately trying to impress his date. Get on in. T-shirt guy. You too?
Two thin supermodel types come up to this.
Go eat something. Go to Arby's. Get some protein. You frighten me.
Inside Olympus, it's crowded and loud. The dance floor is big, packed with low, mirrored ceiling above it. Diana and the other three come into the bar looking around. Angle, clean, isn't hard to spot. His booth is the boothiest. His posse the scariest. His life the largest. He's every inch the thug made good. A girlfriend is draped over him, clearly high. Back on our gang, scoping him out.
Clean. I don't think that's his real name.
This has to be surgical, Diana. These guys start shooting, the stampede alone will kill people.
Diana is looking at Clean with deadly focus. She moves through the crowd.
Diana, did you? Damn it. Get near the exit.
Diana comes to the edge of Clean's little enclave. A bodyguard starts to move in her way, and she jabs him hard in the shoulder, causing him to keel over in silent agony. The other three pull their guns and keep them pointed down.
Guess you want to see me.
He throws his girlfriend off and then stands. Diana says nothing, just looks at him.
I keep hearing my products getting jacked by some crazy strong bitch in a tiara. That better be you, because here you are, too scared to speak. It's sad. The way a funeral is sad. You open my world now.
The girlfriend slinks up to him.
What are you talking about? I need a little sugar.
Get your skank off ass off of me while I am doing business.
Honey,
you can do better.
The girl looks at Diana, surprised. Clean is not pleased.
What'd you say to her?
I was talking to you.
He looks uncertain, and she begins speaking low, quick, hypnotic.
This isn't your world. What of this did you create? Somebody else told you how to succeed, what to want, what to wear, who to kill, who to be. And you made it because you're tougher than the other man. You're smarter than the other man. Getting the edge, making the edge, defying everybody's laws to become exactly what they want you to be. There was a you before you, and there'll be a you to kill you off. That bothers you, not because you're afraid of death, but because you are smarter. Smart enough to see past all this and know that real power is in connection, in community. Immortality is in legacy. You know the things you truly need are not the things you buy or take. You can do better. You can do good.
A beat. Clean looks genuinely furious.
You got no understanding at all.
He gets in her face, a beat.
Go have yourself a drink. Mess around with my business or make any more long-ass speeches in my face. I'm a riddle you with holes. You cool?
She turns and walks away, Steve trailing. Clean sits as he talks to his boys.
Girl likes the sound of her own voice. Walk it off, man. Walk it off.
Steve and Diana arrive back at the bar where Griffin has joined the others.
That's it? The crime lord of the whole... everything? He gets a pep talk?
I thought we were trying to avoid gunplay.
What a little lasso action. This guy's probably connected to Strife.
I have a feeling about him.
This is why I can't leave you alone. You dress that guy down in front of his crew and it doesn't go your way.
The signs don't point to Queen.
Then what are you doing here?
Well, I'm celebrating, people. We've been doing some big-ass good and we earned a little swagger.
That we did.
The bartender comes up to them with a small glass of red wine.
For the lady...
Is that from Clean? Don't drink it.
It's from upstairs.
Diana looks over where the bartender indicates. Angle on the stairs that are roped off. A guy quietly turning away. A hip young couple. Diana takes the glass, looks at it, takes a sip, and drains the entire thing. Puts it down, looking thoughtful.
I have to dance.
Without another word, she moves from them. Walks easily through the crowded dance floor.
Hey, you gonna dance with a man?
Me? Why would I?
He turns to the bar, deliberately not looking. Diana reaches the middle of the floor. She raises her arm and holds still. Turns her palm in and brings her arm down with ritualistic rigidity. This could go very badly. Then she moves her leg back and turns fluidly, a curve rippling up her body as she flows into a dance that is sensual, ethereal, and wicked sexy. This is not a warrior march, though it remains idiosyncratic. It is neither out of place nor unnoticed on the crowded floor. Angle on Griffin and Ben as they watch in rapture.
Are you watching this?
It's like Christmas.
Steve stands at the bar, but his eyes are on the mirror, where he can see her just as well as anyone. He would never admit he's entranced. Diana from above as she dances, the camera tilting down to reveal that it was on the mirrored ceiling that we are actually at eye level with her as she continues to move. The beat gets fiercer and so does Diana, shaking and tossing her hair. A Euro-trashy guy moves to her, but she turns, unseeing. A Rasta guy nudges out Euro, who grabs him, and as they dance gets more frantic, Rasta gives Euro a shove, sends him flying back, but slowly everything is moving slowly. Diana stops. Everyone save her is slowing to a dead stop, some in midair, and everywhere there is a strange silence. Diana looks around and sees the stairs as the intimidating club guy is looking right back at her. He unhooks the rope, stepping to one side. Diana makes her way toward him, curious, as the camera follows through the stilted throng, till Diana reaches the stairs, passing the club worker who puts the rope back and angle on the rope, latching back, and the real time starts again, and everything continues as it was. Interior green room, moments later. Diana enters a huge, lush, but quirky private room, colorful and retro, like its occupant, who stands with his back to her at the bar, mixing a drink. As she crosses toward him, the camera rises to show the floor is the other side of the one-way mirror on the dance floor ceiling. Diana almost appears to be in midair as she walks over the writhing crowd.
I like you knew you needed to dance for me, and it was worthy. I mean, for a girl who's never seen Soul Train, or you can bend it a bit. It's pleasing to me, but not nearly as pleasing as the way you handle clean. Fingers on triggers, and you throw down with a badass motivational speech. Not gonna do squat. Heavy kudos. Heavy kudos. A good surprise. Really hard to come by.
He turns, holding a drink with an umbrella. He's funky, unassuming, cute in a sheepish kind of way. For all the goof, though, there's steel in his smile. This guy is a god.
And you were a surprise.
Dionysus?
Bacchus! The Romans! They came and changed all the names. How random is that? A lot of gods wouldn't go for it, but I like Bacchus. It swings.
I was told the gods were dead.
Yeah, well, most of them are.
Athena?
Deader than Elvis. Who's the guy that's dead? After your time. A god exists because people believe in it. Worship. It's a thing. Goddess of wisdom? Not hanging in. Not today. But nobody ever stopped worshiping wine.
Or
Ares, yeah. It's his world now. I mean, Aphrodite's still looking good, but not for publication. I think she's had some work done. Also, she's out of her mind.
This whole world is mad.
You're not wrong.
And you do nothing. Worse. I've seen what you provide to the people out there, and it's a good lot stranger than wine. They're crippled by lusts and addictions, and you use all your power to do what? Watch and laugh?
You're a feisty little filly. Let me ask you this.
He picks her up with one hand and slams her into the bar. Doesn't even spill his drink.
Are you a god? 'Cause I am, and I'm used to being addressed like one.
Why am I here?
He lets her up.
Ares. He's not playing by the rules.
He strolls away as she rises, coughing. He's casual again.
What rules does a god have?
Why does nobody get this? I'm a god, yeah, but I'm also only a god. Wine and rubbery, it can bring men together or bring them apart. I can't choose which. Humans choose. More and more they choose blindness. They choose hate. They choose isolation. It's major mojo for Ares, and he wants more where that came from.
There is war everywhere. Why would Ares need more?
Why do billionaires cheat on their taxes?
He gives her a shrug. It's answer enough.
And you can't stop him because it's against the rules?
Back in the day, Zeus wanted to manifest an animal form for some hot girl-on-swan action. It wasn't a big deal. It's trickier now. I come down to party, but that's it. Ares doesn't come at all.
But he has strife.
Heard you two been mixing it up. Pretty insane. Guy's not a featherweight now.
Then where is he? Why doesn't he challenge me?
This is what your little crime-busting spree is all about. Riling strife? You gotta think bigger than that.
Tell me what you brought me here to tell me.
You are so much like your mother. Have you heard the name Spearhead? You've seen the building tall, shaped like some guy seriously overcompensating? Well, that's Ares' base. Technology, which means weapons, the best and latest, and that's just their day job. Their mission is misery. Ares is stepping over the line, and I think Gateway is going to be the footprint.
Why do you care?
I lost New Orleans. Think about that. Besides, I like this place. Just like you do. It's lively.
Spearhead, what am I looking for?
Abrilla Callis. She runs the joint, direct conduit to Ares. She's like Medea without the maternal warmth. You want to get near her? You might need a more subtle look. Your boyfriend can help you with that.
I don't have a... Who?
The pilot. Trevor. Don't even bother, Diana. What's happened between you two isn't chance. It was predicted by the oracles millennia ago.
It was?
No. But check out your face when I said that. There's something, there's something going on.
He's a good man.
He's beneath you.
She stiffens at the insult.
No, I mean literally, he's there.
He points down, she looks. Angle on Steve, seen from above through the floor, searching through the crowd for her.
I like the guy. Kind of crabby, but he's there, he's fighting. Could be useful or could seriously get in the way.
She looks up at Bacchus. He's clearly serious now.
Gotta know what you're willing to trade.
Thanks. A moment.
Thanks for the drink.
She goes as the camera pulls away from Bacchus.
Wasn't that cool? I'm working on another one that makes everything intensely sort of plaid. I'll hook you up.
Exterior Spearhead afternoon. The building towers over us with gleaming phallic grandeur. The head of the security approaches a guard as another talks with people inside a car.
We do a retinal on every guest, no exceptions.
They're really beefing it up.
Well, that's not your business.
Ma'am.
The head of security fades back in front of the bushes, watching the road. A golden rope whips out of the bushes and around his waist. He's pulled back in faster than he can blink. He hits the ground, the lasso still around his chest. He goes for his gun, but Diana shoves him back to the ground.
Hi, we need some access codes.
Inside Spearhead hallway, the camera pans up a pair of high heels, tight skirt, tightly buttoned professional woman with her hair tied back and round glasses on. It's a classic look, in fact. It's Diana Prince. Next to a Natalie suited Steve. They come out of the elevator at the executive level, head for Callis's office.
God of War makes weapons. Talk about hide in plain sight.
Why should he hide? Nobody bothers to look.
Well, we're looking, and we're just looking, okay? Remember when you found clean and just and had just a chat? That was good. Let's chase that feeling.
I won't fight unless it's time to.
Right.
Inside an assistant's office, he's young and square-jawed, a comer. He looks up as they enter.
Hi, Steve Trevor and Diana Prince.
I'm sorry.
I think we're early. If I could just get a water, that'd be great still.
Sure, just let me check my book.
He reaches under the drawer. Diana grabs his head and smacks it down on the desk brutally fast. He's out.
My water thing was working.
He was going to call the guards. Oh.
She pulls a gun with a silencer out from under the drawer.
I was wrong.
Inside Callis's office moments later, as the doors smash open, Diana and Steve behind them reverse on Callis, sitting calmly at her desk.
Well, that's a bit much.
Diana whips her lasso out around Callis's neck. Callis looks down at it calmly.
Let's talk.
And hands where we can see him, please.
Weaved by the oracles at Delphi. blessed by Athena, am I right?
So you do serve Ares.
Oh, yes.
Why? Does it work if I ask stuff? Does it work if I ask stuff?
His power is practically limitless, and he has chosen me to run his empire on Earth. Do you know what that makes me?
The bad guy?
What are you planning to do to Gateway?
Destroy it.
Her calm shakes Diana a little. There is real vulnerability to the question.
Why?
Because we can. People get above themselves, and they need to be reminded how fragile they are. All the wars and all the weapons that we can manufacture will never be as blessed as mass, mindless fear. Gateway will be the first of many great cities to collapse, and we will enter a golden age of fear and apathy, and everybody in the world will do as they are told.
She has them wrapped, and she knows it. She smiles.
Plus, it'll really help out with some zoning issues.
How? How are you going to do it?
Oh, you should have asked that first.
Diana dives into Steve, knocking him to the ground as gunfire erupts behind them. Six heavily, almost science fictionally armed guards are taking positions just outside the room. Kella stands free of the lasso.
You could have been quicker.
A guard starts into the room as Diana kicks the door from the floor, swinging into his face with a riot mask shattering force. She leaps up and grabs Callus, holds the rope to her throat.
Is there another way out?
Callus puts her hand on the painting and the tapestry rises. The steel door lowers behind them. Diana kicks the desk so hard it goes through the doorway and a part of the wall, knocking down a couple more shooters.
Go!
He races into the war room. Gunfire makes Diana let go of Callus, who pitches forward as Diana follows Steve out. Inside Spearhead's war room, Diana and Steve race through to the other side. Everyone stares at them stupidly. Till gunfire makes everyone in the room duck and cover. A burst nearly gets them. Diana deflects them, but they're forced to take cover behind a console. Diana grabs a couple of computer disks and whips them at the guards. One cracks a faceplate. One digs into a forearm, and the two guards are out of the game.
Now!
He runs low. She follows, deflecting a couple of shots, and a tech guy bolts from his hiding place. Freaking, colliding with Diana, the guards fire indiscriminately. Close on the tech guy as he jolts with their impact. Looking at Diana in bewildered pain, he drapes himself on her, and she stumbles back, thrown. He dies staring at her. Steve pulls her out the door into the prayer chamber as she looks up at the guards in rage, deflecting the last few shots almost automatically. Inside the prayer chamber, the hanging statue of Ares looms over them as they enter. Steve is looking for a way to bar the door.
This thing doesn't lock!
And a still stunned Diana looks up into the grotesque eyes of the hanging Ares statue right above her. She whips her rope around its middle and heaves, bringing the thing down onto the floor. She pushes it against the door, its marbled head smashing into dust as it hits. We hear thuds and shots of the other side, but the door isn't budging now. Inside the silo is empty, and Steve nearly plummets over the railing edge. The drop seems endless. There are walkways at various levels, but no stairs. All about them, various machines come to life, designed for repair, welding, and bolting. Most of them attached to the walls. They reach out and start firing bolts, lasers, and some insectile repair bots crawl menacingly down at them from above, wielding saws and pincers.
What the hell is this place?
Hold on to me.
He grabs her and around the waist and shoulders, leaving her arms free.
Oh, I hate this a lot.
They step off the edge and plummet down the seemingly endless shaft. At the last second, Diana whips her lasso and hooks it onto the lowest platform. They swing onto the wall, into the wall, Diana taking the brunt of the impact. Steve is jarred loose, and they just grab each other's hands, swinging precariously. 20 feet below them, the black hole suddenly starts to iris closed, giant sheets of gleaming metal sliding out of the wall.
Get ready.
She swings Steve and drops him. He rolls and slides along the moving metal, dropping into the hole. Diana pulls the lasso free and lands on her feet. She does a swimmer's dive headfirst into the hole, a microsecond before it closes completely. Inside the bottom of the shaft, Diana falls another 20 feet before she hits metal. The huge, nearly pitch-black shaft is curving as she slides down headfirst down at a breakneck speed till it levels out, and then she collides with a standing Steve. They right themselves.
We gotta keep moving.
They dwindle down the endless dark tunnel. No one follows. Inside the tunnel under the city, it's the same chamber the reporter died in. Diana jumps up, pulling Steve after her. He's exhausted.
This must go up to the subway or a sewer or something.
She is wrapped. He turns, following her gaze as the camera comes around to frame the two of them in front of the mural, the armored figure on horseback fighting the dragon. She actually reaches out to touch it.
It's St. George. He fought a dragon.
And the dragon had two heads?
I wasn't there.
The chimera. Head of a lion, body of a serpent, head of a ram. An engine of destruction run through by Bellerophon.
Bellerophon.
This is what Bacchus sent me to find. I have to fight this.
A dragon?
The giant room, the tunnels. See the buildings coming down? The chimera is here. It's already working. This was left for me. It's a sign.
It's not a sign. It's graffiti. Technically, it's vandalism.
She turns on him, genuinely pissed.
What is wrong with you? Why do you still deny what is right before your eyes?
What's wrong with me? By the way, Diana, how was your day? Anything special happen?
She stops, steaming, her voice lower.
His own people shot him. I didn't think they would do that.
Of course they would do that!
If I could have saved him.
How many more people are you going to wish you could have saved? You look at this, you see dragons, I see buildings coming down, and these people in those buildings die.
They're already dying. I'm trying to keep them this from getting worse.
And it never occurred to you that you're the reason it's getting worse? You stand up, call yourself a hero, the uglies are going to have to bring you down. There's an old saying, when elephants fight, the mice get trampled.
So I should what? Put her around in my plane bringing help to one of 1,000 needy people? That's a life's work?
I used to think so.
So this is why you're bitter, because I...
Again, this is not the time to talk about my feelings,
because
Diana.
I make you feel small.
Well, we're all small compared to you. From up there, we probably all look like ants.
I thought you were mice.
We're human beings, Diana, and that's something you will never understand.
Your people have lost their way. The world crumbles and they do nothing. They need a hero to show them what can't...
Yes, we need a hero, not a demigod sent from on high to lecture us about potential. We need someone with no advantage, no hope, who's still out there trying. A hero doesn't decide, ever, a hero to be a hero. They're forced into it, and they step up, and then they live with the consequences.
He's in her face, seething with conviction, and she is shaken.
You'll make your show, fight your fight, and people will love you for it, and they'll need you for it, and they'll start to grate, to bore you, and one day you'll just go back home to paradise. Because every day you wake up knowing you can just go back to paradise. You're not a hero, Diana. You're a effing tourist. Sorry, there's a kid right there.
And he is slammed to the floor by Strife, Diana stepping back. Startled as Strife has Steve down and a sword to his throat, he looks up at Diana.
I was in position 3 minutes ago. I just had to let them finish.
She whips her lasso around his blade, and he instantly yanks the blade away, pulling her off her feet. So she has used her momentum to knock him off Steve. They roll, come up, and she goes for him, but he's fresher and has a sword. As he hacks at her, her barely deflecting with her bracelets.
So, this is a sign, is it? A portent just for you. Your arrogance is a delight.
Steve hits Strife on the back of the head with his 2x4. It splinters. Strife turns and Diana lassos his arms to his side and pile drives her elbow into his face, sending him flying as she calls out.
Get out! Go!
Steve hesitates. Diana looks and Strife stands. He slices through the lasso with his blade. The glow comes off it as it falls limply to the ground. He holds his blade up.
Forged by Vulcan.
And disapparates, reappearing behind Steve with the blade by his throat. Diana tenses up.
Please don't mistake this for a standoff. His head is severed more than my life or anything after. I want his head. One thing saves him.
He holds out his free hand in a fist, loosens it, and from it drops a small chain. Just 6 links. Old, burnished metal.
Do you recognize this? Maybe you're too young.
I know what that is.
The chain that bound the first Amazon. The chain that took their power.
The chain moves in his hand, twitching slightly. Steve sees the pain on Diana's face.
Submit to my will and I will kill him.
Diana hesitates. Steve can barely hiss.
Take him out!
She looks at him.
A true Amazon would never even hesitate. Your decision is made. Now, say it.
No!
Yes.
Yes?
I submit.
Do it.
Slowly, she gets on her knees, holds out her 2 hands. The chain rises, twitching like a snake, pointed at her, straining at her.
I submit.
The chain shoots out of Strife's grasp and attaches to her hands. We pan up from her hands to her face, and there is color drained from it, not just ashen shame. She looks less vital, less alive.
If your mother could see you now.
Diana looks at herself, at her chains, at her torn and tawdry outfit. Strife throws Steve violently to the ground as he strides to her. He descends on her, cloak billowing. Then they are gone. Steve looks, breathing hard, at nothing. Angle, for a moment, we are inside Strife's teleporting experience, and it's unreal and agonizing. Diana stretched and defeated, and then we're exterior jungle. The two appear on a hilltop in the deepest South American jungle. Beyond it is more jungle, and more beyond that.
Beautiful. Do you think I come here when I want to be alone?
His touch is almost invasive as he feels her weakened body.
And you are so alone.
He clutches her head.
These slackened muscles, slow reason. You want to die of shame, but you'll do anything to live. They always do. Humans. So live, for as long as you can.
He tosses her back hard as she falls, hits her head on a rock with a crack. Blackout. Exterior jungle night. Thunder is what snaps her eyes open. It seems like it was bright a second ago, and now it's dank black all around. She lies a moment, breathing hard, listening. Wind mixes with the sound of animals in the brush, but she can't distinguish, can't place it. She's experiencing these sounds in the human way, as cacophony, and she goes a little wild-eyed at it. She rolls over onto her stomach, and there's a snake, a big one, eyeing her. It hisses, and she looks at it with fearful incomprehension.
I can't understand.
It strikes at her, and she scrambles back, getting to her feet. Rain starts to pepper the ground as she makes her way blindly forward, unseeing, unsure of her weak human legs. In moments, the rain is in a torrent. Diana continues moving, losing her footing, and strides down a ways. It's not a romancing the stone funhouse slide. It's awkward, made more so by her chained wrist, and it ends with rocks. Diana cries out in pain. She gets unsteadily to her feet and stumbles to the bottom of a tree, where there is slightly less rain. She is at this point as muddy and disheveled as it is, as if she's been out there a week. Her lips are white and shaking. Inside Steve's workplace, night. Steve and the gang sit alone in the big room. Griffin paces as Sully tends to Steve's cuts.
We have to do something for the city. With Diana gone.
Don't talk like she's dead.
She's not here. Spearhead is, and they've targeted Gateway. So they've got a weapon of mass dragonness, or we don't even know? Isn't running the best ever plan?
What about the city?
They can come too. There has to be some way we can expose Spearhead.
On what? The news they own?
Strife. He struts about, Steve. You said he was an arrogant monster. Could we draw him out somehow?
That's the last thing we want to do. Strife just got the most powerful woman in the world to kneel before him. What do you think he's going to do to the likes of us?
He didn't get her to kneel.
He can't even look at them.
I did.
Exterior jungle day. We start on her feet, which are pretty torn up by now. The rest of her is not much better, as she doggedly makes her way uphill. She comes up to a crest to get a view of what's on the other side. The camera follows her, and what's on the other side is more of the same. A blanket of trees that spreads out forever. She squares her jaw against her disappointment, starts making her way down the other side. We see a bunch of mangoes atop a tree. Hear efforts from below the frame. Tilt down to see Diana trying vainly to climb up and get some. She's making a decent effort. She is, after all, athletic. But she's chained. And she's got no purchase. She shimmies up, then slides painfully back down, finally letting go and dropping on her back. Exterior same a bit later. She's got a long branch, is trying to scrape them off, and does. One plump mango dropping off and landing, and rolling away. As Diana drops the stick and scrambles after it, and it rolls into a stream. She splashes in, chasing it a few feet, and goes down on a caught ankle. Her cry of pain telling us she's twisted it at best. She's gingerly pulling her leg free as the fruit drifts quickly away. Outside the jungle at dusk, Diana's coughing is harsh and intense, doubling her over. When it subsides, she looks up, regaining her equilibrium. She is sweaty as she is pallid. She's using a crutch. She looks up, and for a moment, we are in her POV. The surroundings are blurred at the edges, sounds eerily detached. She shakes her head to clear her vision, gets another view of the landscape, and sees a line of smoke coming up far up, away uphill. She changes direction, picking up her pace as best she can. Exterior, Steve's workplace. Morning. Through the window, we see the gang still talking. Griffin is bringing in coffee, Sully yawning in the morning light. Pull back to reveal to see a young gangster looking in at them. He crosses the street as a limo pulls up. The window comes down to reveal Clean.
Yeah, they all here. Four of them. Same at the club.
Oh, Wonder Woman, huh?
For a while, I think that's what they're talking about.
The strong lady's out of the game, and it's my turn to play. Yeah, I'm gonna do real good.
Back in the jungle, Diana is trying to make her way uphill. She looks for signs of the smoke, but the trees are thick. She looks hungrier and hollower than we've ever seen her. A few more steps and she collapses in the brush. She nearly passes out, but again she shakes her head to clear it. She starts pulling it herself along the ground. A machete enters frame by her face. Angle her warped POV as she looks up is a middle-aged South American peasant. He is holding the machete inches from camera, speaking harshly in his own language.
What are you doing here? We don't want any trouble. Go back down. Go back down and leave us alone.
I'm sorry. I don't understand. I don't understand.
A middle-aged woman and her teen son come through the brush. The woman starts arguing with the man. He's pointing at her chains. Then, out into the distance, she overrules him, says something to her son. The son grabs the chain and starts pulling Diana up. The man comes at her, and for a moment she tenses, but he gets in front of her and lets the son drop her arms over him as he hoists her on his back and starts up. Exterior village, continuous. It's a small village of tents and huts, maybe 20 people total living there. They stare at Diana as the man dumps her by the nearest open tent, at which sits an old woman. Diana leans back against the tent, breathing hard, still not sure what to expect. Someone puts a canteen of water to her lips, and she drinks it, spilling as much as she takes in. The old woman hands her a piece of flatbread. Shaking, Diana brings it to her lips, stopping before she eats.
I'll repay you. It's not charity. I'll work. I can work.
She bites into the bread gingerly, then cramming it in for the first time ever, a tear runs down her face. Inside the silo, day. At first, it just sparks and flashes. Then we see clearly magnetic arms retracting, level after level, from the long metal monster. Inside Spearhead War Room, continuous, Callus and the ops are monitoring.
And go.
Inside the silo, the last arms pop back as it plummets. We get our first good look at the Chimera. It's long metal with insectile arms and machines attached or folded in hatches under the skin. At the bottom of it, at the bottom end is the lion's head, the multiple drill digging tool that glows with fire. The top end is the ram's head, a digging machine with giant teeth like the front of a bulldozer upside down, and with two curved horns for scraping and pulling. Fire also spews from the side as well. Two heads attached by 100 feet of thick metal serpent's body, totally practical but unsettlingly anthropomorphic. Released, it shoots down the tunnel, eventually curving into the lower tunnel it has carved out of the earth and out of sight. Inside Spearhead's war room, continuous.
She's out, running hot, straight and normal.
Op 1 turns from his screen to Callus.
It has to be tonight, and it has to be perfect.
Perfect is doable, but by the time it is settled, half the city will be gone. Not our half, and tomorrow will be on
it. It's a machine. Can we please agree that it's a machine?
Callus, there's someone here to see you.
Exterior village, day. Diana is half asleep. Clearly feverish, when angry voices awaken her. She peers out of the hut she's in, seeing five rebels, long since been co-opted by the drug trade, four men and one woman, are entering the village, yelling at an old man. He offers them a bottle of liquor, which they take. Then one of them kicks him in the gut. Diana tries to rise, but she is too weak. She shrinks back into the hut. The door is thrown open, and she is pulled out, along with the rest. One of the rebels points at her and starts yelling. The man who found her explains quietly, but is slapped in the face. The head of these guys grabs Diana. Off to one side of the village, an old metal wash tub has been overturned and hidden hatch opened. Two of the rebels pull sacks of what must be drugs out of the pit below. The head guy tugs at Diana's blouse, looks down it, smiles. But the old woman is talking now, and the rebel runs his fingers along Diana's head, smells the sweat, fever. He tosses her away like a plague dog. Other men grab her. Diana is pushed into the pit. Inside Callus's office, afternoon. She sits behind her desk with her same smooth smile.
You know, I see a lot of potential in you.
Reverse to reveal Clean sitting opposite her.
Yeah, the second lady that's told me that. I must be doing something right.
The difference is I plan to help you realize that potential.
Whatever God-fearing American wants. More. Talk is there's about to be some restructuring here in town.
And who's doing that talking?
Well, that's the Daily Double right there, isn't it? A strong lady posse, that's all they're hiding out. Together.
Really? Where?
Inside the pit, Day. Silence. Diana sits on the ground, weak and feverish, amongst the six or so others. She looks to one side and sees a girl of eight staring at her intently. The girl says something, but Diana looks at her dully, not comprehending. The old lady who first fed Diana leans out of the shadows, speaks in heavily accented English.
She asks who you are.
Diana looks at them, then settles back against the wall.
It doesn't matter.
The girl speaks again, still looking as stern as a schoolmarm. The old lady translates.
She say you should remember, say they take everything away from you except for that.
Slowly, light breaks onto Diana's face as she hears the familiar words. She sits up, looks at the little girl. Engel, the old woman in the refugee camp, in slow motion and from Diana's POV, asking her name. The hooker on the street in the gateway. The indignant girl at the club eyeing her from her POV. All of these pass through Diana's head, all asking who she is, and she realizes who's been watching her all of this time.
Mother.
At first, she looks down, shamed, but she takes a moment and looks the girl straight in the eye, new determination on her wan and bloodied face.
Tell her that I am Diana. I'm Princess of Themyscira. Say I am chained and humbled, but I am unbroken. I am an Amazon.
She stands, barely able to in the tiny space, looking out through the cracks in the bamboo grating.
And tell everyone to move back.
Exterior village, interior the pit moments later. One of the rebels, gun slung over his back, opens the grate, tossing in a few scraps of food. Diana shoots up out of the darkness and pulls him headfirst into the pit. He thrashes about. Diana gets an elbow in his face, her precision and training still a part of her. He grabs at her and pulls her into the mud. They thrash like dogs, precision gone, till Diana gets behind him with her chain around his neck and pulls, ugly, unrelenting force in her arms until he slackens. Exterior village day. Diana peeps her head out. The two men remain in view, one woman. They are haranguing the man who found Diana about the food. He's laid in front of them. One of them goes in the hut. The other two watch, laughing as a sack of grain comes flying out. Diana slips out of the hatch and snakes her way along the grass while they're distracted. She makes it behind the cluster of huts, looking for something to wield. Finds a shovel. Diana hears one of them calling out, looks to the hut. Engel on the rebel starts for the hut, and Diana comes around the corner, baseball batting the shovel in his face. He goes down hard as the woman starts to unsling her rifle, backing up, and Diana barrels into her, knocking them both down. Getting the gun away, the woman rolls up, and Diana swipes her in the knees with the shovel. The woman howls in agony, and Diana comes up with an elbow in her face. The rebel inside comes out firing. Diana dives out of sight. She gets up to a crawl, but the rebel fires through the flimsy hut walls, and she drops to the ground again. She peers through a hole he's made, sees him advancing, and she's got no cover. The rebel comes to the other side of the thin wall, and Diana comes through it, knocking him into it. He pulls away, trying to get his gun clear, and she grabs his belt as he falls before him, pulling him down. The pit gets dirtier here. The more room to maneuver than down in the pit, just as primal. He gets off a few wild shots and his clip is empty. He butts his rifle into Diana's bad ankle. She screams in pain, and the kidney punches him twice, three times, then swings her leg around his neck and holds him down, a wrestler's hold. He gets his knife free, and she lets go, grabs his wrist with both hands. He punches her across his face and pushes her down, knife in her face, and she can only push back until she starts to prevail, her strength and determination overwhelming his. Behind them, the female is not unconscious. She scrambles for a rifle. Diana twists her grip suddenly and breaks the guy's wrist. He screams as she puts her whole body behind the forearm that breaks his face. He goes down like a rag doll. Diana standing barely, legs wide and shaking above him. She is breathing hard, the image of fury and power. From inside the hatch, the little girl watches Diana hold up her chained wrist and begins to pull. The other woman gets to her gun, eyes still on Diana's back. Diana strains. Her straining becomes a low noise, an agonized roar. A scream of pain is resolved in her slow motion. She snaps her chain apart. The chains crumble as they come apart, her wristbands clean of them. The woman fires. Diana blocks the shot behind her back without even looking. The woman is stunned, but about to shoot again when the man who found Diana puts his machete gently to her throat. Diana moves toward the hatch as the old lady and the others come slowly out. Diana is not limping. There is color to her that has been lacking. She looks down at the girl.
Thank you. She tells me she has something, a gift for you on top of the ridge.
Exterior clearing at the top of the mountain moments later. Diana crests the brush to find a clear, open plateau. The others are coming up behind her. Angle Diana's POV containing nothing, just flat dirt and maybe a wink of sunlight hitting something indistinct. We push slowly in on Diana as a smile spreads over her face. Next to her, the old lady looks out, confused.
Maybe it's a very little gift.
She starts to walk slowly, looking down like she's lost a contact lens, as Diana just smiles.
Everyone, look around for the gift.
Above the jungle, we are moving at jet speed over the landscape. Suddenly, the invisible jet in front of us banks, and we catch sunlight on it, outlining its shape and distorting the view beyond it ever so slightly. Then it is gone again. Interior Steve's workplace, evening. There's a rumbling beneath the building. All four of our guys, sitting under one hanging light in the middle of the dark space, stop and look at each other.
So that can't be good.
The floor bubbles right in the middle of them. They all move back, freaking, as Strife rises, grinning.
Worse, much worse,
Strife faces Steve.
Did you really think I wouldn't find you?
Actually, I was promised that you would.
Ben throws a switch, and the room is suddenly floodlit from one side where Strife, pinned by the light, can see. Angle, dozens of video cameras, all in a semicircle, from the big professional to the smallest handheld. They're all unmanned, but all blinking red. Strife glares at the cameras. Steve, flanked by the others, continues.
It's called the Internet Age. No more hiding and no more shadows. This is going out to the whole world. So, what are you going to sing for us today?
You think this matters?
Everyone with a laptop just found out that there is an apparating demigod with a face like a boiled hamster living in Gateway. I say it might cause a stir.
No one will believe it, even what they see.
And if Gateway goes up in flames?
Gateway's not going up.
Inside Callus's office, Callus is watching her computer, three separate feeds, three different angles, while Clean still sits across from her.
It's going down.
The totality of Clean's betrayal dawns on her. She looks up at him murderously. He's cool as ice.
Yeah, so maybe I talked to them before I talked to you. Now your boy's talking to everyone. Y'all are gonna be famous.
Clean's men burst through the doors, cock their weapons as Clean stands.
That's my world you're trying to end. What do you think that I was gonna do?
She glares. Inside Steve's workplace, Steve still facing off with Strife.
Don't you get that? It's over? There's no point in killing us.
And we can't stress that enough.
We've already talked.
They won't listen. You overestimated your race. It'll be hidden, forgotten, a prank, a joke.
Wow, that's just what Diana called you.
Diana is gone.
Exterior coast, sunset. We continue to barrel along at jet speed, catching just highlights of the jet from the setting sun. Inside Steve's workplace.
It's too bad, because without Diana, there's no one to give a damn about Strife anymore.
Strife pulls out a spear, but does not brandish it. Instead, he bangs the end on the floor with a disproportionate thunderous whoomp. In response, the earth shakes a little. Steve presses forward as the others fade back.
You're the joke that everyone will forget, because we only remember the good ones.
Whoomp! A second stamp from Strife's spear.
Bring Diana back. Give us a real fight. Don't be forgotten. Be immortal.
I am immortal!
Whoomp!
And now you will all see!
The Chimera bursts through the floor right under Strife. It shoots up, the demigod straddling its head, all the way through the ceiling and back down, reaching 40 feet high and showing just half itself. Everybody runs. The Chimera looks down at them, and blazing flames shoot from its mouth, filling the room and frying the cameras. Inside Spearhead's war room, Tech 2 is freaking. Actually, everybody is. On various screens are internet feeds, infrared, aerial cams, all showing the same thing.
It's surface! It's not supposed to surface!
Shut it down!
I can't!
Inside Callus's office, Clean is gone, wide on Callus, all alone at her desk, head in her hands. The enormity of her failure is sinking in.
We have a situation.
You'd think.
Exterior, just outside, the gang runs to their van as behind them the Chimera smashes the sides of the building like a thing insane.
So what, yay?
They hop in and peel out as the Chimera flops thunderously down on the ground and shakes after them. It's over 100 feet long, and its ram's head tail smashes into the sides of the building as it gives chase. Inside the van, Steve has the pedal down, but the van is still losing ground.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Steve turns hard left. Outside on the street, the van screeches into a side street as the Chimera is about to overtake it. The Chimera keeps plowing down the street. The van goes around, running parallel and then cutting back across the street behind the Chimera. As it passes behind, the Chimera's second head roars fire at the van, blasting it. Inside the van, as flames whip all around them.
Behind is not better.
And then they're past the street again on the other side street. Angle on Strife rides the Chimera intently. He pulls its head up like making a horse rear and then disappears as the head plunges through the road, tearing through concrete like it's water, and the whole thing disappears into the earth. Angle on the van as the gang looks about for the beast, Steve muttering,
"Where'd it go? Where'd it go? Where'd it go?"
If we can get to the bridge.
A spear rips through the roof and plunges through Steve's arm. He cries out in pain. The man swerves and the spear goes back up, plunging back down. This time, Griffin in the leg.
Yow!
Atop the van, Strife pulls the spear out again and just digs his hand into the front of the roof, starting tearing it off. And he's gone in an instant. Everyone in the van teases.
Sully?
He leans over in a dead faint, Scully scrambling to get in the back.
Ben, give me my bag.
The Chimera erupts from the ground in front of them. Steve swerving and hitting the thing broadside. Everyone thrown hard to one side. They look up through the hole in the roof as the Chimera keeps shooting up out of the ground and then starts to topple on them. They're trapped. They're dead. The Chimera topples, and then it's ripping back by something unseen. Something that cuts talon-like grooves in its head and sends it end over end in the other direction. Inside Diana's jet. Here, the plane is still partially invisible. The area around the below visible but distorted and overlaid with virtual readouts and maps. It's sleek and sci-fi but still feels oddly organic. Diana lies on her stomach to operate the plane, so the effect is almost one of actual flying. She is in the outfit left by her mother, lasso at her hip. Only it's a little shinier, the tiara a little more intricate. The colors vibrate. Diana is a superhero now. Below her, we see the streets and the Chimera breathing fire down the street from both ends as she banks back toward it. It lifts its lion's head, and Diana dips low, smacking it hard to the ground. The jet shudders and careens a bit, but she controls it, pulling her back up. Angle on Steve is watching from a block away with Ben, who's wrapping his arm. They're out of the van and behind a building. Sully is in the background, tending to Griffin.
What's happening?
Steve doesn't answer. Angle on the Chimera, turning its head as though sniffing the air, close on its sides as out push four thick, rounded jets, swiveled like Harrier jets. The monster entire lifts from the ground, the jets swiveling and sending its flying straight, lion head leading after its foe.
Oh, come on!
Griffin wakes up enough to see it in the sky.
Hey, it's flying now.
Angle on Diana, From the front, the Chimera, visible in the background, moving above her, shifting, finally locking on her and blasting fire at her as she banks hard. We see the jet ripping past as the Chimera banks the other way. Diana brings the jet around and flies directly at the Chimera, dipping low at the last second as the beast passes overhead, slamming up onto it, knocking it into a roll that swipes the corner off the top of a building. Diana has more trouble gaining control, and she comes around fast, getting near the Chimera and then pulling straight up into the sky, the beast hitting all the jets to catch up, both leaving the city far beneath them. Close on Diana, pulling at the stick for all she's worth.
All or nothing.
She pulls it back and loops around, coming at the Chimera, which is still going straight up, dead on. The jet's wings slicing through the Chimera just below the lion's head. The head topples back toward the city as the body continually blindly straight up. Inside the jet, things are fritzing pretty badly, and she's shaking hard. Diana looks down and sees the lion head is falling straight toward a crowd.
No!
She pulls the jet around. Angle on the street. People scream and scatter, the flaming head plummeting like a meteor. Diana gets the jet under it and takes the hit, the head rolling off and back onto the street just as it clears. The jet skidding on the street, finally hitting Steve's van and spinning out, slicing into the side of the building and settling amid the smoke. Angle, Steve, has followed its unseen course with confused wonder. He starts for the smoke, drawn to it, seeing a figure emerge, silhouetted in smoke, but unmistakable.
Diana!
She stops, seeing him, relief on her face. He breaks into a near run. Bonk! He goes right back on his ass, having hit his head on the invisible wing.
What? Ow! What the hell?
She reaches him, squats as he sits up.
It's my glider. My jet. It's invisible. I'm sorry.
You have an invisible jet?
Where's Strife?
Somewhere near. You have an invisible jet?
Yes.
I thought Amazon didn't have modern technology.
That's because you couldn't see it.
Angle, the Chimera. As it continues shooting up, the ram's head trailing at the bottom sparks to life. Eyes narrowing with intent as it takes over. The engines slow, stop, and spin around. The monster bullets down through the clouds toward the tiny city space. Angle on the street. Diana is moving forward, looking up.
I've got to keep that thing in the air. Can you get these people off the streets?
I'll try. You know, I kind of made the big monster come out.
Who else?
Diana, I just... Look, everything I said to you, I...
The Chimera roars overhead, spewing fire at them and everything in sight. Diana pushes Steve down, out of the way.
Clear the streets!
She runs on top of a burning car and leaps up two stories to a fire escape, swings herself on as she whips the lasso up to latch on higher.
Now he wants to talk about his feelings.
Angle on the rooftops. As Diana comes leaping up into frame, landing on the very edge of the nearest roof and running along the edge, the camera moving with her as she leaps from one roof to another. Then coming behind her and slightly above as she approaches an intersection and jumps into midair, the ground seven stories below, and the Chimera roars through frame, Diana landing right on its back. She hits and rolls back with the Chimera's momentum. She grabs a piece of it and holds on, getting her bearings as the Chimera shoots between buildings, occasionally spewing fire at the street. Diana whips out her sword and plunges it into the thing's back. In response, various arms designed for hacking and sawing open up from its body and respond, Diana slicing and kicking them off. A hatch opens near the top of its neck and a swiveling gun pops up and fires nonstop. Diana deflects.
I'm so tired of guns!
Finally, aiming the bullets back at the weapon and destroying it. The moment she does, the wall of the building dips at her, and she goes flat as bricks and dust pummel her. The Chimera is literally trying to scrape her off. Angle, on the street. Debris from the building comes crashing down as Steve and Ben are trying to herd people away. They are either frozen in panic or looking up.
Come on, move!
Nothing to see here.
Listen to me!
Suddenly, three Humvees come screeching across the corner, avoiding the flaming wreckage and crash cars. In the passenger seat of the front Humvee, a convertible stands clean. He pulls up beside Steve.
I thought this plan was to save the city.
We gotta get people out of the city or underground. I can't budge them.
Clean hits his lieutenant, who's been listening, on his shoulder. He runs back to spread the word as Clean reaches into the Humvee. He pulls out an automatic weapon and fires it into the air. A couple of his men do the same.
Get off the streets!
People listen. The other Humvees pull out to herd detail. Clean fires again.
Hey, watch where you shoot that thing. There's somebody up there.
angle on Diana, has weathered the wall scraping and is making her way to the head of the Chimera. She raises her sword to plunge it in, and Strife appears in front of her, in motion, slamming into her and sending them both rolling back. They fight for purchase on the careening metal dragon. Then they fight each other. He produces a sword and they hack at each other with lurching inelegance.
I owe you a debt of thanks.
I do too.
To be paid in blood.
No other way.
Again they go, even as the Chimera scrapes against the walls. Diana is having trouble holding her own, but she is relentless. The Chimera suddenly plummets like a roller coaster, and the two drop, snagging onto its head as it levels out again, just feet from the street. Tangled, swords gone, the combatants claw at each other, straining still for purchase.
Is this not grand? This is what we were meant for. The signs were everywhere. The painting, the city still crumbles. After you die, it will.
The Chimera is headed straight for the construction site, a half-built building that this beast is clearly going to fly right through. Strife is above Diana, facing the back, and does not see. He pushes his spear at her face, her hands on the shaft, straining to keep it away.
I remember one thing about the painting.
Waits for the sight to get closer.
You're not in it.
At the last second, Strife looks around and Diana unexpectedly rolls him off to the side, grabbing his spear and dropping him as she catches his foot with her lasso. The Chimera goes through the sight, and instead of hitting the steel beam, Strife is dragged through tons of concrete, steel, glass, the bottom unfinished half. Diana has the spear stuck in the Chimera, uses all of her might to hold on to it until her rope recoils back to her. No Strife on the other end. She climbs on top and pulls the spear out.
Enough!
And drives it into the beast's neck, over and over, sparks and fire erupting from the wound. Angle! From the street, the Chimera swoops and shudders. Clearly losing control, it finally straightens out, heading down the street and straight for Steve and the crowd of people he and Clean are herding away. He realizes they're not going to get away in time. Angle on Diana. She sees the crowd several blocks away.
Enough!
She drives the spear down deeper. The lights in the Chimera seem to go out, and she grabs the horns and pushes its head down to the ground. Then up at the last second to slide along the street in a crash landing that tears pavement for four blocks before it stops, just 50 feet from the crowd. The dust settles, and everyone stares in awe. A moment, and the head lifts. People move back, and Clean levels his machine gun at it. Then the head lifts more, rips, and Diana holds it above her by the horns. Arms up in a warrior's victory stance. The thing is three times her size, and the sight of her holding is impressive indeed. The crowd goes wild. Strife suddenly knocks her aside, grabbing his spear, the head rolling away as he jumps on her, his face broken and blackened. He drives the spear at her heart, but she grabs it, keeps it from going in. They strain. Automatic fire peppers the demigod. Steve has Clean's gun, is firing with brutal precision. Diana looks with shock at him. It does nothing but enrage Strife. He disappears. Diana rolls up with the spear and hurls it with all her might at Steve. There is a moment, her eyes on him, where we can see nothing but contempt from her. Slight fear from him. Then Strife appears right in front of Steve, and the spear goes instantly through him.
Ah!
The point as close to Steve's heart as if it had been to Diana's. A moment, and Strife collapses. Steve and Diana hold their gaze, and a measure of relief and respect creep into both. They didn't know if that was going to work. Lightning streaks up from the spear sticking out of Strife's body. Everyone backs away. The lightning streaks back down, touches the ground right in front of Diana. Smoke pours out, twisting, forming, becoming a kind of statue of an enormous, bizarrely armored warrior 20 feet high and hunched before her. Out of the smoke steps that warrior. There is a light about him, almost coming from his joints, that tells us this is an apparition, not the god himself. If ever Ares' face looked human, it is past that now. His voice is all around, the thunder itself.
Woman.
Ares.
This is my kin, my blood. What right have you to spill it?
No warrior enters the arena without blood on the line. Even Strife knew that.
You will suffer for this. You will see this world in ashes.
Will I?
You cannot defeat a god.
They can.
The people of Earth turn their back on me? On war?
Someday, maybe.
I am in mankind. I am in their darkest hearts and their greatest schemes, and I am never going away.
Neither am I.
She turns and starts away. Then you will see me again, girl.
Yes, let's keep in touch.
Ares nearly bursts with rage, but a hunk of concrete from the building above falls right onto him, and he poofs out of sight. And the entire image dissipates. As we see what we're looking at, it's a large bowl of rippling water, widened to sea, interior, Hippolytus' chamber, night. Circe is staring into the bowl. She looks at Grave.
The fury of Ares is eternal. What Diana has started here will shake the earth.
Come around to see Hippolyta, Aethra behind her. There is nothing but pride in the queen's smile.
That's my girl.
Exterior street. Diana walks a few steps, drops to her knees. She is far from the crowd, and only now lets exhaustion and relief overcome her. She looks down a moment, breathing hard. When she looks up again, Steve is standing before her, her sword held in his outstretched hands. It's a deliberately formal gesture.
You drop this.
She stands easily and takes it, sheathing it.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Finders keepers.
She smiles.
Did you mean it? About not going away?
Of course.
I'm aware that I'm an idiot.
Not at all.
Little bit.
Little bit. But you were right. I didn't understand. People. I still don't. I've got a lot of work to do.
Well, you got us. And we recently added a gun-wielding crack dealer to the roster. That's got to be a plus. Of course, you got a jet somewhere. Though you probably won't need a pilot.
She pulls him into the kiss of his life. After a good long while, they part.
Your whole life on an island with only women, and you can kiss like that?
It's an interesting story.
It can't possibly be as good as the one I'm making up in my head right now.
Are you sure about that?
He smiles, defeated. They start off toward the others.
So, what happens now?
Exterior, Greece, afternoon. We fly above the beautiful city, frame up on an ancient temple sitting on the edge of a cliff. As we see it, the invisible plane whooshes through frame, rippling the visuals. Exterior temple, a bit later, Diana is kneeling before a statue of Athena. The one is small and worn with age, but it's recognizably her. We find Steve standing at the edge of the temple, by the cliff, waiting. After a time, she gets up, walks by him to the cliff's edge, looking out at the sunset.
It's not what you're used to.
I still feel her here.
Athena? What'd you say to her?
I'll tell you one day.
She puts a toe over the cliff.
Whoa, whoa, hey, Diana, the jet's over there, or there.
I know. I've been thinking about gliding, about reading the wind on my own. It would be useful.
Reading the... Okay, you're a hell of a woman, but Diana, you can't fly.
She throws a look over her shoulder. That neophyte incomprehension with a little ironic smile underneath.
Can't.
Blackout. The words Wonder Woman hit the screen. The end.